ಜಯಂ ಶ್ರೀಪಾದ ಪರಮಹಂಸ ಪರಿವ್ರಾಜಕಾಚಾರ್ಯ ಅಷ್ಟೋತ್ತರ ಸದಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀಮಾನ್ ಅಭಯ ಚರಣಾರವಿಂದ ಭಕ್ತಿವೇದಾಂತ ಗೋಸ್ವಾಮಿ ಮಹಾರಾಜ್ ಶ್ರೀಲ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದಿ ಜಯಂ ನಿತ್ಯಲೀಲಾ ಪ್ರವಿಷ್ಟ ವಿಷ್ಣುಪಾದ ಪರಮಹಂಸ ಪರಿವ್ರಾಜಕಾಚಾರ್ಯ ಅಷ್ಟೋತ್ತರ ಸದಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀಮಾನ್ ಭಕ್ತಿ ಸಿದ್ಧಾಂತ ಸರಸ್ವತಿ ಮಹಾರಾಜ್ ಶ್ರೀಲ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದಿ ಅನಂತಕೋಟಿ ವೈಷ್ಣವ ವೃಂದಕಿ ನಾಮಾಚಾರ್ಯ ಶ್ರೀಹರದಾಸ್ ಠಾಕೂರ್ ಕಿ ಪ್ರೇಮ ಸಹೋ ಶ್ರೀಕೃಷ್ಣ ಚೈತನ್ಯ ಪ್ರಭು ನಿತ್ಯಾನಂದ ಶ್ರೀ ಅದ್ವೈತ ಗದಾಧಾರ ಶ್ರೀವಾಸಾದಿ ಗೌರ ಭಕ್ತ ವೃಂದಕಿ ಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀ ರಾಧಾ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಗೋಪ ಗೋವಿನಾಥ ಶ್ಯಾಮಗುಂಡ ರಾಧಾಗುಂಡ ಗಿರಿ ಗೋವರ್ಧಾನಕಿ ವೃಂದಾವನ ಧಾಮಕಿ ಮಾಯಪುರ ಧಾಮಕಿ ಮಧುರಪುರಿ ಧಾಮಕಿ ಜಗನ್ನಾಥಪುರಿ ಧಾಮಕಿ ದ್ವಾರಕಾಪುರಿ ಧಾಮಕಿ ಗಂಗಮಾಯಿಕಿ ಯಮುನಮಾಯಿಕಿ ತುಳಸಿದೇವಿಕಿ ಭಕ್ತಿದೇವಿಕಿ ಸಾಮವೇದ ಭಕ್ತ ವೃಂದಕಿ ಗೋ ಪ್ರೇಮಾನಂದಿ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಯಸ್ ಟು ದಿ ಅಸೆಂಬಲ್ಡ್ ಡಿವೋಟೀಸ್ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಯಸ್ ಟು ದಿ ಅಸೆಂಬಲ್ಡ್ ಡಿವೋಟೀಸ್ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಯಸ್ ಟು ದಿ ಅಸೆಂಬಲ್ಡ್ ಡಿವೋಟೀಸ್ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಯಸ್ ಟು ಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀ ಗುರು ಗೌರಾಂಗ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಯಸ್ ಟು ಶ್ರೀ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದ ನಮಾಮಿ ಶ್ರೀಮದಾಯ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಪ್ರಸ್ಥಾಯ ಭೂತಲೆ ಶ್ರೀಮದಿ ಭಕ್ತಿವೇದಾಂತ ಸ್ವಾಮಿ ನಿಧಿ ನಾಮಿನೇ ನಮಸ್ತೆ ಸರಸ್ವತಿ ದೇವಿ ಗೌರವಾಣಿ ಪ್ರಜಾರಿಣಿ ನಿರ್ವಿಶೇಷ ಶೂನ್ಯವಾದಿ ಪಾಶ್ಚಾತ್ಯ ದೇಶಧಾರಿಣಿ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೆ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೆ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೆ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ಸಂಸಾರ ಸಾಗರೇ ಮಗ್ನಂ ದೀನಂ ಮಾಂ ಕರುಣಾನಿಧೇ ಕರ್ಮಗ್ರಾಹಗೃಹೀತಾಂಗಂ ಮಾನುದ್ಧರ ಭವಾನವ ಶ್ರೀಮದ್ಭಾಗವದಾಖ್ಯೋಯಂ ಪ್ರತ್ಯಕ್ಷ ಕೃಷ್ಣಮೇವ ಹಿ ಶ್ರೀಕೃತೋಸಿ ಮಯಾನಾಥ ಮುಕ್ತ್ಯರ್ಥಂ ಭವ ಸಾಗರೇ ಮನೋರಥೇ ಮದೀಯೋಯಂ ಸಫಲಾ ಸರ್ವದಾ ತ್ವಯಾ ನಿರ್ವಿಘ್ನೇನೈವ ಕರ್ತವ್ಯಂ ದಾಸೋಹಂ ತವ ಕೇಶವ ಭವೇ ಭವೇ ಯಥಾ ಭಕ್ತಿ ಪಾದಯೋಸ್ತವ ಜಾಯತೇ ತದಾ ಪುರುಷ ದೇವೇಶ ನಾಥಸ್ತುಂ ನೋ ಯದ ಪ್ರಭೋ ನಾಮ ಸಂಕೀರ್ತನಂ ಯಸ್ಯ ಸರ್ವಭಾವ ಪ್ರಣಾಶನಂ ಪ್ರಣಾಮೋ ದುಃಖ ಶಮನಂ ತಂ ನಮಾಮಿ ಹರಿಂ ಪರಂ ಜನ್ಮಾದ್ಯಸ್ಯ ಯದೋನ್ವಯಾದಿದರದಶ್ಚಾತ್ತೇಷ್ವಭಿಜ್ಞಸ್ವರಾಣ್ ತೇನೇ ಬ್ರಹ್ಮ ಹೃದಾಯ ಆದಿಗವಯೇ ಮುಹ್ಯಂತಿ ಯಲ್ ಸೂರಯ ತೇಜೋ ವಾರಿಮೃದಂ ಯಥಾ ವಿನಿಮಯೋ ಯತ್ರ ತ್ರಿಸರ್ಗೋ ಮೃಷ ನಾಮ್ನಾ ಸ್ವೇನ ಸದಾ ನಿರಸ್ತಕುಹಗಂ ಸತ್ಯಂ ವರಂ ಧೀಮಹಿ ಪ್ರೋಜ್ಜಿನ ಗೈದವೋತ್ರವರಮೋ ನರ್ಮತ್ಸರಾಣಾಂ ಸದಾಂ ವೇದ್ಯಂ ವಾಸ್ತವಮತ್ರ ವಸ್ತು ಶಿವದಂ ತಾವತ್ರಯೋನ್ಮೂಲನಂ ಶ್ರೀಮದ್ಭಾಗವದೇ ಮಹಾಮುನಿಕೃದೇ ಕಿಂಬಾವರೈಶ್ವರ ಸದ್ಯೋ ಹೃದ್ಯವರುಧ್ಯನೇತ್ರಕೃತಿ ಶುಶ್ರೂಷು ಮೀ ತಲ್ಕ್ಷಣಾನ್ ನಿಗಮಕಲ್ಪತರೋರ್ಗಲಿತಂ ಬಲಂ ಶುಗಮುಖಾನಮೃತದ್ರವ ಸಂಯುಧಂ ಪಿಬತ ಭಾಗವತಂ ರಸಮಾಲಯಂ ಮುಹುರಹೋರಸಿಗಾ ಭುವಿ ಭಾವುಕಾಹಂ ಸಚ್ಚಿದಾನಂದರೂಪಾಯ ವಿಶ್ವೋಲ್ಪತ್ಯಾದಿಹೇದವೇ ತಾಪತ್ರಯ ವಿನಾಶಾಯ ಶ್ರೀಕೃಷ್ಣಾಯ ವಯಂ ನಮಃ ಯಂ ಪ್ರವ್ರಜಂತಮನುಭೇದಮೇದೃತ್ಯಂ ದ್ವೈಪಾಯನೋ ವಿರಹದಾದರಮಾಂಜುಭಾವ ಪುತ್ರೇದಿ ತನ್ಮಯದಯತ್ತರವೋಭಿನೇದು ತಂ ಸರ್ವಭೂತಹೃದಯಂ ಮುನಿಮಾನದೋಸ್ಮಿ ಯಸ್ವಾನುಭಾವಮಖಿಲ ಶ್ರುತಿಸಾರಮೇಕಂ ಅಧ್ಯಾತ್ಮದೀಪಮಲಿ ತಿತೀರ್ಷದಾಂ ತಮೋಂಧಂ ಸಂಸಾರಿಣಾಂ ಕರುಣಯಾಹ ಪುರಾಣ ಗುಹ್ಯಂ ತಂ ವ್ಯಾಸಸೂನುಮುಪಯಾಮಿ ಗುರುಂ ಮುನೀನಂ ನಾರಾಯಣಂ ನಮಸ್ಕೃತ್ಯ ನರಂ ಚೈವ ನರೋತ್ತಮಂ ದೇವಿಂ ಸರಸ್ವತಿಂ ವ್ಯಾಸಂ ತದೋ ಜಯಮುದೀರಯೇ ಕಮನೀಯ ಕಿಶೋರ ಮುಗ್ಧಮೂರ್ತೇ ಕಲವೇಣು ಕುಣಿದಾಮೃದಾನನೆಂದೋ ಮಮ ವಾಜಿ ಚುಂಬನಾ ಮುರಾರೇ ಮಧುರಿನ್ನ ಕನಿಕಾ कवि गावी। ओम विष्णु पदाय कृष्ण प्रस्थाय भूतले श्रीमदे भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वती देवी गौरवाणी प्रजारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्यादेशधारिणी श्रीमल गुरुचरणारविंदाभ्याम नमः। वंदे नंदव्रज स्त्रीणां पादरेणुम भीष्णशाम व्यासं हरिगदोद्गीतं पुनादिभुवनत्रयं गोपीचरणारविन्दपरमानवे नमः। मरंगलविराजितचक्रशङ्खं कौमोदकी सरसिजं करुणासमुद्रं राधासहायमतिसुन्दरमन्दहासं वदालयेशमनिशं प्रतिभावयामि। कोमलं पूजयन् वेणुं श्यामलोयं कुमारगा वेदवेद्य परं ब्रह्म वासदां पुरतो मम। मूगं करोति वाचालं भङ्गं लङ्घयते गिरिं जल्कृपाकमहं वन्दे परमानन्दमाधवं श्रीकृष्णाय नमः। श्रीमति राधिकाय नमः। सर्वत्र गोविन्दनाम सङ्कीर्तनम् गोविन्द गोविन्द। ओम पार्थाय प्रतिपोदिदां भगवदां नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन ग्रथितां पुराणमुनिनां मध्ये महाभारतं अद्वैतामलवर्षिणी भगवती अष्टादशाध्यायिनी अम्बद्वामनुसन्ददामि भगवद्गीते भवद्वेषिणी। नमोऽस्तु ते व्यास विशाल बुद्धे कुलारविन्दाय तपत्र नेत्र येन त्वया भारत तैलपूर्ण प्रज्वालितो ज्ञानमय प्रदीपा प्रबन्न पारिजाताय त्वोत्र वेत्रैकबाणये ज्ञानमुद्राय कृष्णाय गीतामृतदुहे नमः। सर्वोपनिषदो गावो दुग्धा गोपालनन्दना पार्थो वत्स सुधीर्भोक्ता दुग्धं गीतामृतं महत् वसुदेवसुतं देवं कंसचानूरमर्दनं देवकी परमानन्दं कृष्णं वन्दे जगद्गुरुं। भीष्मद्रोणतटाजयधृतजला गान्धारनीलोत्पला शल्यग्राहवती कृपेण महनी कर्णेन वेलाकुला अश्वत्थामा विकर्णघोरमगरा दुर्योधनावर्तिनी सोतीर्ण खलु पाण्डवैरणनदी कैवर्तक केशवा पाराशर्यवज सरोजममलं गीतार्थगन्धोत्कटं नानाख्यानगकेसर हरिहदा सम्बोधनाभोदितं लोकैः सज्जनषल्पदैरहरः प्रदीयमानं मुदा भूयाद् भारत पङ्कज कलिमल प्रध्वंसिन श्रेयसे। मूगं करोति वाचालं पङ्गं लङ्घयते गिरिं यल्कृपाकमहं वन्दे परमानन्दमाधवम्। यं ब्रह्मा वरुणेन्द्ररुद्रमरुदस्त्वन्वन्दे दिव्यैस्तवैर्वेदैर्साङ्गपदैर्क्रमौपनिषदैर्गायन्नियं समगा ध्यानावस्थित तद्गतेन मनसा पश्यन्नियं योगिनो यस्यान्दं न विदुसुरा सुरगणै देवाय तस्मै नमः।
So yesterday, when we finished this class, we were talking about Krishna is saying that in order that the mind, the time, karma, and swabhava, four things, the mind, the time, karma, and swabhava, they are all connected to each other. Because they are connected to each other, the possibility is that if you get The whole critical factor in all these four is the time. If you give time, if time comes up, immediately all the other three will also pop up. Mind will pop up, karma will pop up, and also svabhavam or prakriti will also pop up. Krishna's point is, and the rishis have actually brought this up, this issue, that when these four things are connected to each other, who is the most dangerous one out of all that is the time. So therefore, their point is that if you have time, the possibility is that karmam will start and the mind will dictate according to the vasanas inside or svabhavam, and then action will begin and you will get bound by that. Because it is like that, they have given us this understanding. Somehow or the other, if you can control that factor called time, by surrendering to Krishna, engaging in Krishna service all the time, in which situation mind will not go into the world outside. That's a benefit. To stop the mind going into the world and engaging in activities there. So their answer to this problem is that somehow if you can pull back the time by not allowing the mind to engage in any kind of karma. Karma means anything outside Krishna consciousness is all karma. Is it not? So Krishna conscious activities, just like chanting the holy name, reading Srimad Bhagavatam, Salsangam, deity worship, this is all part of that engagement. If somehow or the other the mind is kept absorbed in all that, then there is no possibility of it creating any bondage for us. And that is what Krishna has put it in a very fine way in the 9th chapter, which we have looked at yesterday in the 13th verse. Bhagavad Gita. Mahalpanastumam partha devim prakritimashritam bhajandi ananyamanaso jnatva bhudadimavyayam. Mahalpanastu mam partha. Krishna is saying, Mahalpanastu mam partha devim prakritimashritam. They will take shelter of devi prakriti. Who? Mahalpas who have understood this principle. All Mahalpas do this. That's what they do. They take shelter of Devi Prakriti. Devi Prakriti means what? Activities related to Krishna. That is Devi Prakriti. Nothing else. Devi Prakriti means somehow or the other linking up oneself with Krishna all the time. That's the principle. Devi Prakriti means that. Other one is everything else outside that is Asuri Prakriti. So, to free oneself from the Asuri Prakriti and to keep oneself connected with the Devi Prakriti is this principle. Mahalpanastu mam partha devim prakriti mashrita. And what do they do? Bhajandi, ananya manaso. That they are completely absorbed in that activities in such a way, ananya manaso, without allowing the mind to go away. And absorbed in Krishna, jnatva bhudadim avyayam. You can see that verse which we spoke about yesterday. The thing is that, somehow or the other, this is always the principle. From morning to night, from beginning, from waking up in the morning right up to night, continuously anushtanam. Anushtanam, one thing or the other, somehow or the other, to absorb in that. And this is how the rishis, they have tied us down in that way. They told us, do like this whole day, and tie us down in that way. That's what they have done. That is why in Vedic philosophy there is so many different kinds of rituals, different kinds of activities to engage us. If there is nothing else, salsangam. If you don't have the time to chant the holy name, or if you had feeling exhausted, or if you had done your part of the deity worship, or reading Srimad Bhagavatam, this one thing, salsangam, does not require so much effort. All it's required is to just to sit and listen. Is it not? Even that find it difficult, people. They say we have to sleep. Not getting enough rest for the body. So, where are we? Think about that. So, rishis are telling us that that somehow bhajanti ananya manaso jnatva bodhanim avyayam. They have found this technique and that's what they have done. This is what they have done to us. So, somehow or the other, not to create karma. This is the idea behind it. That you don't get involved in so many other rubbish things in this world and create karma unnecessarily. You should not have time for that. That was their point. You shouldn't have the time for that.
So it should go like that. As I was saying to you that among the strict followers of Vedic culture, who followed for generations the Vedic traditions, they are heartbroken with the way things are going today. You can imagine that. That their generation has slowly stepped away from that first, and then the successive generations are following the same route. Is anybody happy? No. They are not happy who first stepped out of the line. They are not happy. Nor their children are happy because they know that this is not the life they wanted to live. And what to talk about their next generation, what is going to happen to them. So this is happening in this world, and that is the difficult situation. Temples which were vibrant ones with peoples and time and reading Puranams was not an unusual thing. In every village there was people who read Puranam all the time. And locally they went to their local temples and listened to the Puranam, which was a common factor, and all those temples have become empty. Brahmanas have moved away to the cities. They moved to cities and then to the capital and then to America. It went like that, the flow, the power of that wave which is coming in the form of the materialism that has caught up all over the world. So their point was, new karmam should not be created. New karmam should not be created. If you ask the question, that are you not blocking the prarabdham then? That question will come, isn't it? Because prarabdham is what is keeping us here in this body. No, it will not become a problem for prarabdham, because no matter whatever you do in spiritual life, any anushtanam or how steady you are in spiritual life, all you can do with that is that you will not fall into new karmam and get caught up from that. That's all you can do. But from prarabdham you can't escape. This principle you have to understand clearly. Otherwise, it's very difficult. People take to spiritual life thinking that all my problems in this world is over. This is the misunderstanding. It doesn't happen. That's not the way it works. If you, no matter what amount of anushtanam means spiritual activities you perform, and somehow or the other you keep yourself occupied in this world, one way or the other, without engaging any fresh karma. If you do like that, you are protected from creating fresh vasanas and fresh bondage. That's all it is. From prarabdham, you can't escape. Even if you are doing all your spiritual activities all the time, without absorbing in any karma outside, prarabdham will come and play its game. That you won't be able to escape from that. That's the way it is. That's the rule. That's the law. And so we can see people are losing heart after a while when something happens in life. They feel that, oh, I have served Krishna so much and dedicated myself this, but results are coming. That is prarabdham. What can be done? Each one of us has to bear that cross that you have to carry. There's nothing you can do. So if you can't escape from the prarabdham, then let it go its own. What else can be done? What else can be done? What can we do about it? Because what you have to remember is, I have created my prarabdham first, and it is after that this body was created. This is the difficult thing to understand for most people. That you have already created your prarabdham, and then the body was created after that. Not that I created the body and then created the prarabdham. Prarabdham was created first. If you read Bhagavatam, you will understand all these things. Jatavarada is saying this, Srinarada Maharshi is saying, Vritrasura is saying, all of them are saying. Why did Vritrasura get that body? Because he went and created the prarabdham by offending Sri Parvati. From there it started. Is it not? So, why did Jatavarada get that body? Because he has gone and got attached to that deer and got into trouble, and the deer's body and then the other body after that. Why did Srinarada Maharshi get that body? Because Srinarada Maharshi knew in his previous life what he has done. When he was Upabarhana, the Gandharva, he sang, and along with the Vidyadhara women, he was traveling around. They went into the assembly of the sages and started singing songs which are not appropriate, and they cursed him, go and take the birth of a Shudra, he had to come. So prarabdham is first created, afterwards the body is created.
So that is what Krishna's point here. Then this point, what the same thing our Bhikshu is also saying here. That you can't escape from that Prarabdham. There's no point in fighting against it. It is there, it will be there, and it will have its own way. It will drive us in this world. Janastu hedu 51. Janastu hedu suga dukha yoschel kimalpanascha trahavomayostal jihvam ko jil sandashadi swadaddi tadvedanayam kutamaya kupil dukhasya hedu yadi devadastu kimalpanas satra vikara yostal yadangamangeni nihanyade kujil krudhyeda kasmai purushaswadehe. All these verses are pointing out to us some truth to us about our own life, telling us if you don't accept all these things, then the answer is suffer. That's all. But once you know the reason behind it, why we are suffering, why this misery is coming in life, and not to link our daily misery, prarabdham, with spiritual life, not to connect it up together. They are two different things. The spiritual life has to go its own way. Prarabdham will come and let it play its game. What can be done? There's no answer to that. So the thing is that first we have created prarabdham, after that the body was created. So only thing is, if you can look into your book or your history of prarabdham, what is left, what is there in that, then what all you have to go through further in this life or another life, and then whatever that prarabdham is dictating, do it. There's nothing you can do about it. If you are meant to become a musician, become a musician. If you are meant to become a sportsman, become a sportsman. If you are meant to become a politician, become a politician. If you are meant to become a businessman, become a businessman. And if you are to study Sanskrit, you study Sanskrit. And if you are to do farming or agriculture, you have to do that. And or if you have to study the computer and become a computer specialist, become that. Above all, if you have to become a terrorist, become a terrorist. That's all the answer is to that. It is there. You see, we have been sent here with that in our intelligence. That chip is already put in when we come here. We are trying to understand this terrorism, isn't it? In another way, we are thinking that why did he become a terrorist? It's all because of the, the radicalization of that. Actually, you have to also remember that when one gets radicalized and all that and engage in all these kinds of terrorist activities, behind that you can see that there is another force operating. That's not simply not because of the radicalization that has happened. These persons had come here with their chip in the head, set up already to come and blow up people. Because that's his prarabdham. What can be done? That's how he had come. So immediate thing is, first thing we have to do is not to create such a prarabdham for others. That's the answer to this problem. Otherwise this will continue forever. So if you look at Puranam, you will understand this. This is what Puranam is teaching us. Pauranigas or Puranams have to tell us these things. They will say like this, and that's where you will find it very funny, some of the things. Whenever Hiranyakashipu and Kamsa, when they want to get better, when they want to act properly, Krishna says, Narada Muni, to stop it. Krishna has done this. Whenever Hiranyakashipu and Kamsa and others, they want to act properly, they want to do the right thing. They also know what they are doing is wrong thing, and they want to do the right thing. But then Krishna will send Narada Maharshi there. Narada Maharshi goes and says to Hiranyakashipu, agitate his mind in such a way, and then Hiranyakashipu changes the ideas. Kamsa does the same thing, isn't it? So the moment Krishna sees that they have a chances of improvement, there's a possibility that they'll get better, he will say to Narada, go and change them back into their original track. Because if they get better, then the purpose for which they had come here will not happen.
So they have to go back to their state. They have created that vasana. So they will go there and they will say, tell Narada Maharshi, go there and turn his screw there and tell him that the whole cause of all this problem is Vishnu. Vishnu is the problem. And once you say that, Hiranyakashipu gets excited. He has got an enemy to fight with. He is looking for an enemy to fight. Nobody is there to fight, so what to do? He has fought everywhere and controlled everyone, and he still wants to fight with somebody. So that mood, fighting nature, does not go away easily. In him, that thinking that I am the controller, I am the authority, I am the Ishwara, that mood is going, not going away. So Sri Narada Maharshi goes there and says to him that, look, you know why you have all this problem? Hiranyakashipu, that this Vishnu is the core person behind it. And that is way material nature works. Krishna puts all these things in it. It is his Logavattu Lila Kaivalyam, Krishna's Lila that is. What can you do about it? So let the prarabdham go on its own way. And in the sadhana, what we do, adhyalpa sadhana, in our normal sadhana, what we do is you are trying to prevent agama karma and sanchita karma. Out of the three, there is three things. Prarabdham, agamam, sanchitam. Isn't it? Prarabdham, agamam, sanchitam. Three kinds of karma exist. Out of that, what we are doing is that this agama karma and sanchita karma you can stop by engaging in spiritual life. Prarabdha karma, you can't do anything about it. Whether you are a devotee, or whether you are a jnani, whether you are a yogi, whomever you may be, the prarabdham will come. There is no escape from that. It has happened to Jarabharata, it has happened to Vritrasura, it has happened to many others as well. So what spiritual life does is it stops agamam and sanchitam. You know the differences between the three. Prarabdham, agamam, sanchitam. Prarabdham means in our karma bank, what is inside us, that karma which has fructified and which has manifested, which is supposed to be exhausted in this material particular body, is called prarabdham. And that karma which you are going to create in this body for the future, that is called agama. And that karma which is still left behind in your causal body, karana shariram, what is still remaining there is called sanchitam, which in course of time turns out to become prarabdham. That sanchita karmam in course of time becomes prarabdham. But if you take to spiritual life or Krishna consciousness, what will happen is this agama karmam won't happen again because you have already taken to the spiritual process. And by purification, sanchita karmam can be wiped out, but prarabdham cannot be touched. That's the law. Prarabdham cannot be touched. Sanchita karmam can be purified and it can be changed. Agamam can be changed. Prarabdham cannot be touched. That is the reason why they say that you take to spiritual life and still all the problems will be there in this body, what it has to happen. But what is already in storage, that gets frozen. And what's going to be created for the future goes away. So, Krishna consciousness, so Bhagavata Dharmam or Bhagavata Dharmam is the important thing of that is, that is why in the Bhagavatam you will see in the beginning itself, Projjita Kaitavo Uttraparamo. That Projjita Kaitavo Uttraparamo, that Dharmam where you do not have any expectation of results from that. Because normally, whatever we do, we will ask the question, what will I get from that? Is it not? We'll ask the question, what do I get by doing that? That's the question. No. Without expectation of any results, whether something comes or not, any results comes from that or not, without any desire for the results from that, continuously engage in the Bhagavata Dharma. And that dharmam is what Krishna is glorifying here. Krishna is glorifying here. So, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the beginning, he started with these words. Projjita dharma projjita kaidavotra paramo nirmatsaranam satam vedyam. Vastavamatra vastu shivadam tapatrayonmulanam. So, dharma projjida gaida votra varamo. This is why it is agaidavam. That means there is no cheating in this Bhagavata dharma. Dharmam, that dharmam, projjidakaida vatraparamo narmatsaranam satam vedyam. It's always very pleasing to those who are free from envy and free from malsaryam, competition with others. So, paramahamsa dharmaha, that is paramahamsa dharmam. Projjidakaida vatraparamo narmatsaranam. Paramam means paramadharmam, paramahamsa dharmam that is. Narmatsaranam satam vedyam. So, this, our bhikshu also here, he has accepted that. You can see that in his thinking, he has accepted that paramahamsa dharmam now. And after accepting that, everything external he has given up. Parigraham has gone away. If you look into Bhagavatam, you will see in the 9th chapter, in the 11th canto, what parigraham does. Parigraham, what parigraham does, you will see there. Brahmana uvacha, the first verse in the 9th chapter, 11.9.1. Parigrahoi dukhaya yat yat priyadamam nunam anandam sukhamabno nitad vidvanyas vakinchanaham. Parigrahoi dukhaya yat yat priyadamam nunam anandam sukhamabno nitad vidvanyas vakinchanaham. Parigraham, what it does is, this is one of the 24 spiritual masters, is spoken there. Our Dattatreya Maharshi is saying what he learned from this experience with this little bird. One little bird was flying and it is looking for its food as usual, a very little one. And it got a little piece of meat somewhere. And it doesn't need a lot of food, very little it needs. It got that. And was flying around with that piece of meat in the hand to look for a place to sit freely and to eat without getting disturbed. It was looking for a place. Meanwhile, some big bird saw that this little one is running away, flying away with a piece of flesh in its beak. So what they did, they wanted that. This is the world, isn't it? So the big birds, they wanted there. So they chased this little one, a little bird. So at one point the little bird realized, so many big birds are after me to get this little piece of meat I have in my mouth. So when that little one realized that her life is in danger, because they will not take only the piece, in that process they'll kill him, kill the little one. Little one thought, the best thing is, I leave it. Let them go after the piece of meat, at least I can escape. So that's what it did. You see that? Samisham kuriram jagnur belinoye niramishaha tadamisham parityajya sasukham samavindadaha. That the little one dropped the piece of meat for the big ones. Let them fight and have it. Let me escape from that.
Samisham parityajya sasukham samavindadaha.
Dattatreya Maharshi is sitting there and watching this. And what did he say then? He says, I learned a lesson. That bird is my spiritual master. The Tathagata is saying, that bird is my spiritual master. I learned one thing from that bird. What is that? Parigrahaya, parigrahohi dukhaya. Parigraham is dukham. Holding something for what you don't need, and that is dukham. Parigraham, that's called parigraham. Keeping hold of things which are not necessary. Anandam sukhamapnodi. By giving up, what happens is anandam, so unlimited pleasure, happiness comes from that. So, akinchanaha. For whom? Akinchana. One who doesn't have anything. He has got unlimited happiness in this world. So, so he says there, he said, tad vidvanyastu akinchana. He is the person, akinchana, means one who doesn't possess anything. He is vidwan. He has knowledge. We see that every time, isn't it, in this world? People who have a lot of money, sometimes it goes. And then it causes more problem than once they had it.
So many interesting cases you will read in the paper because of Parigraham. There is so much wealth, and this wealth is gone, completely gone. Either government has taken away, or the lost in the business, or something or the other happens, and their money goes, and then they are in trouble. So that is why he is saying here that Akinchanaha, one who does not have anything of his own, he is the happiest person in this world. So Janaka says this, King Janaka, he says there, when he was the king in Mithila, he says, Mithilayam pradeeptaya name kinjal pranashyati. In one point, you will see this in the Ashtaprakita, he says, Mithilayam pradeeptayam name kinjal pranashyati. There's a statement from him. He says, if the whole Mithila city gets burned, nothing is going to happen to me, he says. Janaka says, the whole Mithila gets burned, nothing is going to happen to me. Anandam sadame vittam yasyame nasti kinchanaha. He says there that the my wealth is a lot more than that, this Mithila, he says. Because my wealth is all inside, not outside. See that? From spiritual realization, this is what happens. That you start realizing that actual real wealth is inside. Krishna consciousness, that's the wealth. Not the external wealth what we have. That will go anyway one day, whether we like it or not. But either the wealth will go or you will go from here. So Janaka had that intelligence to see that Mithila was a very opulent place, a lot of wealth. But still he's saying that Mithila is nothing for me. It can go if it goes. But whereas the wealth I have got inside, I won't lose it. The wealth outside, I'm going to lose it one day anyway. So, Akinchanatvam Mahaswastyam, if you remain as Akinchana, one who is not attached to that, then you can live in this world peacefully. So, what it means is, Parigrahahi Dukhaya. He left that Parigraha. That's what he has done. Janaka has done is, that attachment or that possessiveness of the wealth and all other things in this world, everything, that asakti or attachment, excessive attachment, that he has left. He has left. And in our Bhikshu's case, he didn't leave it, but they left him. After all, what we want is, it should go. Either you leave it and go, or let that go. Somehow or the other. So, for some people, by Krishna's grace, everything will go one day. Everything will go from them. But people who are ignorant, they will say, oh, everything I've lost, I've got this, I lost this, I lost this. Saying this, they'll cry the whole life for what they have lost. So, but those people who have some spiritual understanding and culture in them, they will, because they have the knowledge, when it goes away, they will say, oh, thank heaven, it's gone. And I've got rid of that problem. Otherwise, I'll have to get involved in that, manage that, and make sure it's not losing its value and all that. So many things, isn't it? So when you have wealth, all that problems remain. But in his case now, everything has gone away. So he says, that headache is over. That's how he is seeing that. He is seeing that. So he felt peaceful after it has all left him. Because he knew very well that everything in this world, one day or the other, will go. One day or the other, will go. Dhanyastu sanyasyati. That dhanya, one who has got that intelligence, he will leave it at appropriate time in life. He will give up, rather than holding on to it. For others, when it goes away, they will feel the severe pain inside. So there are interesting stories about this in the different books. You can read this in the Nidhi Shatakam, Vairagya Shatakam. So many books they talk about. They explain this to us better. When it goes away, you feel tremendous happiness inside. Suppose you had a loads of assets in this world, and you are all the time absorbed in the management of these assets. And it does take a lot of time to protect it and to maintain it and to protection from losing its value and to make sure that it's all being looked after, isn't it? It's time at the end of the day in life, it's time. Which means in that process you could do things which are not very right. So in such a situation, when you becomes too much, you can't handle yourself, at that time if something goes away by some reason, you will probably say that at least that's gone, that headache is gone. So it is like that. Not only wealth, even family members, one day if it becomes too much, if they go, you let it go, that is the best thing to do. Otherwise it is parigraham. But many often what we do in family life, particularly this is, we'll try to hold it back. Somehow or the other, if I can fix it and get it back. It won't, because it's prarabdham. That person's prarabdham is driving in another way and you're fighting against that prarabdham. That won't work. So at some point, you'll be forced to let it go. There won't be any choice there. So when finally, after a long fight with the prarabdham, when you lose, then you will say, oh, it has gone now, the headache is gone. You'll think. Family members, this happens very often. It's not unusual. Quite often this happens in family life. Sometimes it's wealth, sometimes it's members in the family, sometimes friends, sometimes society. Everything is parigraham only. So parigraham is this, the parigraham causes problem. Unless we realize that this connections with the world in any way, it is not going to be permanent. So, and when it goes, you feel a little relieved. Oh, that's gone, that headache is gone. So, one Mahatma was there, and the king gave two very expensive jewels to this Mahatma. He was a sannyasi, and Mahatma also. And so, he thought he should please this sannyasi by giving these two expensive jewels to him. And that sadhu, that Mahatma, was living very, very simple. But for the king, these jewels are very costly ones. So he goes to the sadhu and says to the sadhu that I brought these two jewels for you. Please take it. So sadhu took it, didn't say anything. And he looked at them. They looked really beautiful. And they were very attractive. And he knew they're very expensive ones. So the king says to him, that I don't want to reveal to you the price of it, it is so expensive, but because I like your detachment and renunciation and everything, I'm giving this to you. You can have it, he said. So, what he did when he got it, he always kept it with him. And always he'll play with it. Looking at it in different ways and wearing it in the fingers, wearing it on the armband and things like that. Always looking at it, getting attracted. And he was flashing it around everywhere, like we do, isn't it? When you buy a new car, what you do? You know, make sure the whole world, isn't it? So, in the same way. but when this was happening, the king got a little bit doubtful about his renunciation. Our king, who gave the jewels, he started doubting. Is he really renounced? Because he is carrying it all the time in his hands, never leaving it behind. And whenever I look at him, he is always playing with it. So look at his nature. As soon as he got it, till then he was a sadhu. Now he has got these things. He doesn't look anymore a sadhu-like. He said like that. So, and all the time he is carrying it with him. So, what he did was, this sadhu said, he started showing off it to others and selling them, the king has given it to me, to give it a little bit more authenticity. He said, the king has given, he's so pleased with me, so he gave this to me, he said. So, after a while, the king started thinking about it. His mind started working. He started thinking, this sadhu, he had been coming to our court for so long, and I've been giving often presents to him. But ever since he got these two expensive jewels, his nature seems to have changed. He seems to be very attached to these jewels, and therefore he wanted to test him. The king wanted to test this sadhu. So he goes to him and says to him, says to this Mahatma, says to him, please instruct me on spiritual life. Give me some upadesh, some transcendental instructions. That's how they do, isn't it? Asked him like that.
So at that time, the sadhu was sitting underneath the tree. On a river bank, there was a tree, and he was sitting underneath the tree when the king went to see him. And the king came and sat next to him and started saying this to him. So at that time, when he asked for these instructions from the sadhu says to him, the most important thing in this life is not to get attached to anything. He says, and he's playing with his jewels at the same time. He's playing with that, isn't it? Because parigraham is the word they used. See that? Parigraho hi dukkhaya. Parigraham causes problems. So he explained to him, the most important thing is to get detached from this world. And if you don't have anything, you'll have a lot of peace, he says to the king. He says to the king, even if you consider a small thing as your own, then you won't have any peace in life. This is what he had to say to him. So, when Mahalpa was saying all these things to the king, king is thinking, is he genuine? From his actions, it doesn't look like that. But he's talking about renunciation and detachment and everything to me. But is he really genuine? Is he talking something? And the key is saying, whatever he's saying is all true, but when I look at him, all the time he's holding these two jewels with him, he doesn't leave it. I've given him something to please him, but I never seen him leaving it anywhere. All the time he's holding it. He's so attached to it, and he's telling me about parigraha. The king was thinking like that. So they were talking like this. In that process, he is playing with these jewels again in different ways. In that process, the jewel fell from his hand and went into the river, which was flowing on side, on the side. It went and fell into the water. When it fell into the water, the king says to him, to this Mahalpa, then, Maharaj, do you know how expensive that jewel is? It costs a lot of money and you have lost it, he's saying to him. So where did it go? He asked him. And at that time he says, there it said, he said, the second one also he threw there. There it is, he said, where it has gone. What is it saying to us? What it's saying is that people who are not attached to things, then they can act as though they are very attached to things. They can act like that. But inside, there is no attachment. That's the important thing. Inside, there is no attachment. Attachment is all not what you show outside. If your attachment inside has gone, then it is, you come out of it. Then even if you hold in the hand, it doesn't matter. So our man has understood. King understood that he had no attachment to it. And the king learned a lesson that for him it means nothing, these two stones. He was a Mahalma, had some realizations about it, that parigraham is causing the problem. So that is what the lesson he learned at that time. So you can see parigrahaya dukkhanam, parigrahaya dukkhaya yad yad priyadamam nirnam anandam sugamapnodi tad vidvan yastu akinchana. A person who knows that parigraham is a problem and he has managed to escape from that parigraham. So far in this Bhikshugita, starting with that first verse, Nayam janome sugadukha hetu na devadalma grahakarma kalaha manaparam karanamamanandi samsara chakram parivartayedyam. That is that beginning. And it is keeping this one verse, all other verses have been written. This is the seed, verse of this Bhikshugita. Bhikshugita's seed verse is that. It is on that verse, expansion is all the rest of the other verses. So, or in other words, the commentary on this verse is all the remaining verses. So, because Bhikshu has sung this song, it is called Bhikshugita. It is called Bhikshugita. In the Bhagavatam, you will see so many Gitas, isn't it? Dattatraya Gita, Aila Gita, Brahmara Gita, Gobiga Gita, and Hamsa Gita. So many Gitas you will find in the Bhagavatam. Different Gitas all joined together. In the fourth, 11th canto alone, you have got the Dattatreya Gita, Hamsa Gita, Aila Gita, and now Bhikshu Gita, four Gitas. Then there is Gobiya's Gita. Gobiya Gita is there in the 10th canto. Then there is Brahmara Gita in the 10th canto. 47th chapter you will find there. So this is one of those Gitas in the Bhagavatam. And Bhagavad Gita also, actually you have to say it is Bhagavad Gita. But we say Bhagavad Gita, it says. Because Bhagavad Gita, the reason for that is that Gita means it is something, it is a feminine thing, Gita, when you say like that. But because Bhagavad Gita is an Upanishad, and that is why we say Bhagavad Gita, because you will see at the end of each chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Iti Srimal Bhagavad Gita Su Upanishad Su Brahma Vidyayam Yoga Shastre Krishna Arjuna Samvade Gunatraya Vibhaga Yoga Nama whatever number Adhyaya it is. It will say like this. Every chapter finishes like that. So this Bhikshu Gita also, individual verses, we have looked now a few verses, isn't it? So in there, you understood there that happiness and distress, sukham, dukham, that is called dvandvam. Dvandvam means sukham, dukham. It is dvandvam it is, isn't it? Happiness and distress. In reality, dvandvam is not good, because dvandvam is false. Where is dvandvam? In the mind. Sukham, dukham is in the mind. Atma does not have sukham, dukham. Atma has got bliss, anandam. Anandam is the nature of Atma. So, dvandvam does not exist in the self, in the Atma. So, when something happens in life, what we like in our mind, we call it a sukham. And when something happens in life which we don't like in our mind, we call it as dukkham. And both these things are happening to the ahankaram. Ahankaram is the one which gets affected by these two things. Which one? Sukham and dukkham. When you're feeling distressed, if you observe carefully, if you analyze it carefully, you will notice that whatever has happened in life, you are taking it so seriously because you are hurt by your ego. Your ego has been hurt. That's the problem. So ahankaram is the one. It doesn't matter what it is. Anyone in this world, when you're getting hurt, it's the ego that is getting hurt. Similarly, when you're feeling happy here in some situation, who is rejoicing? The ego. Ego is rejoicing. Atma is transcendental. Atma has no interest in whatsoever what's going on here. But ahankaram has a lot of interest in everything what goes on here. So, sukham, dukham, both these things are happening to the ahankaram, to the ego. So, that is why it says there, dundvani sarvani ahilaha tributyaha kinjil samashyutta vipandi vastu tan margadasye galidam samastam sapashyadam sanchalanam kathabi. Vasishtam will say like this, that Vasishtam, your Vasishtam will talk very detail about this. It's saying here that this experiencing happiness and distress all the time, I know I have said this many times before, you have heard this also many times, but why am I repeating this? Because if I don't repeat it, you will forget this. When another time distress comes, you will again do the same thing like before. I'm repeating only for, because I know I have said this so many times, and you will also be thinking why I'm repeating this. The reason I'm repeating is that if I don't repeat it, because we are conditioned in a particular way, whenever distress comes or happiness comes, immediately we will identify with the false ego and then suffer from that. So to remind it again and again is the process. So he says here that this ahankaram What is that ahangaram? Ahangaram. So happiness and distress is the swarupam or the nature of the jiva. Jiva's nature is to be happy and to be distressed all the time. That is the very nature of jiva. So this ahanda or ahangaram is, where is it born? It's born from the Atma. It's born from the Atma. It was born there and and it dissolves there finally. It's just a wave which has come from that and it goes back into it. So, but the adhishtanam means the foundation of this, is the truth, which is Atma. That is the truth. Ahangaram is not truth. Ahangaram is a false thing. That is why Krishna is saying in the Bhagavad Gita that the 8 things he spoke, isn't it? Bhumi apanalo vayu kham, then mano buddhi evacha. After saying that, Krishna says, to make it again clear, ahangara idiyame bhina prakriti ashtada. Ahangaram also belongs to prakriti, not to Atma, not to Satta. It belongs to prakriti. He establishes that. Ahangara idiyame bhina prakriti ashtada. It belongs to prakriti. So, swarupam Atma is satta chit sugamatram. Satta chit, that is what it is. And there, swarupam, one who has realized that, for him, that all that's happening, happiness, distress, everything in life, is something like a screen in the cinema. For that is a screen in the cinema, for the reason that in the scene, in the screen, so many things happen, is it not? That whatever happens, happiness or distress in life, it doesn't affect the screen. He remains as the screen, not identifies with the movie. If you identify with the movie, you will have problems. That is why, it's like you can see, it's a very good comparison, because in cinema, when it rains, the screen doesn't get wet, isn't it? Screen doesn't get wet. When there is a big fire going on, screen doesn't catch fire. Screen doesn't catch fire. Similarly, sometimes in the movie, you can see a big Battle of Britain 1940 or something, Second World War or something goes on. They're showing you all these scenes in the screen, and you are looking at all that, and if you identify with that, then you will suffer. But if you know that the screen is untouched, and when the movie is over, everything is, the screen is white, screen is still standing there. So, so whether it is rain or fire or war or whatever it may be, the after effect of all that is your happiness and distress. Because if you are identifying with it, you will feel happy. If you are not identifying or distressed, whichever it may be. So, the after effect of that movie on you is this happiness and distress. But instead, if you inquire about this, where is all this happening? This war or fire or rain or whatever it is. Everything is happiness on the screen and nothing is happening in the screen. Screen is not affected by any of those things. Once you have understood that, then you know that it is a movie, it'll come and it'll go. So similarly, the same realization, if we get it, that Atma Swarupam, our nature of Atma, is Anubhavam, and there all these things are coming and going. Like a movie, it comes and goes, a lot of thought waves, Chittavritti comes, lot of emotions, like anger, greed, hate, envy and all other things. All these things are coming in the mind and they are going away. So, till you catch hold of that Satta inside, Atma inside, or holding on to that Chitta inside, that till that time, till you get hold of that Chitta inside, your Chittam will play the game. Chitta and Chittam, there is very little difference. Chitta is that original Chit Shakti inside, Satta Chitta Anandam, isn't it? That Chit Shakti is the nature of the Atma. Sat is the nature of the Atma. Chittam is the one where vasanas are stored. So, Chitta and Chittam, there is not a big difference.
between chit and chittam in writing. One extra ta that makes it chittam. Chit is only one ta. There's another one extra ta you put it, it becomes chittam. You see? So, chittam chit iti vijanidad takari rahidas sada. Panjadeshi says there, you should know this difference between chit and chittam all the time. If in the chittam, the word, if you take one ta away from there, what is left behind is only chit, only chit. So, contemplating on sense objects, vishayadhyanam, thinking about other sense enjoyment, good and bad, happiness and distress, right and wrong, karmam, and we have imposed all these things on the self. Instead of knowing that these are things that's happening in the chittam, we have come to chit and saying that it is in me. It is in me. Although none of them is in me. They are all in my mind and the ahankaram. That's where it's happening. Which one? All plans of sense enjoyment, happiness and distress, which I consider good or bad in this world, my different kinds of emotions, thought waves, and apart from that, even the actions what I perform in this world, where do they end? They end with my chittam. It cannot go further than that. Maximum karma can do is it will create some karma vasana in the chittam and it will go, finished. That's all. It doesn't touch atma still. So, once this, but what has happened is that we have put all the, superimposed all of them on me, on the self, and I am suffering from that. I am suffering from that. Who is a jnani then? Jnani is a person who has become very light inside. He has become very light because he is not loading all these things on himself. He is not loading it on himself. So, it doesn't have, that means he, jnani means, jnani doesn't mean, sometimes we say normally, a self-realized soul, enlightened person, isn't it? A jnani is an enlightened person, or realized person. He is not only realized, he is also very not loaded by anything. He has no load on his back. He is very light-hearted. Because he has nothing to carry in this world. Why? He doesn't take anything on his shoulders. No karma, no contemplation of sense objects, no emotions on his back. He's not getting affected by that. In other words, he knows when emotions are coming, thought waves are coming, karma is coming, he knows that it's all in the mind and the sense objects, nothing to do with me. He has moved himself away from the influence of the mind and the senses, in other words. So, how did he manage that? Because he realized the self. That's how he managed that to happen. Once you realize the self, that's what will happen. You will move away freely from that. So, and in Bhikshugita also, like everywhere else, it is due to the grace of the spiritual master. Spiritual master's grace. So, something you have to remember here, this Bhikshu has received satsangam somewhere. And Guru has instructed him, because you will see there that he has taken Tridandi Sannyasam, he says there. So there must have been somewhere the Bhikshu in this course of or what happened in his life, when he had that received that renunciation, Vairagyam had come to him, he must have approached somebody whom he has accepted as a spiritual master who has enlightened him in these things. Vairagyam came to him by Krishna's grace. But just by Vairagyam alone it didn't happen. That somebody has convinced him that Acharya or Guru or spiritual master whoever it may be, that you are not this body what you consider yourself to be. And instead you are that The knowledge is very simple, that he has been told that you have nothing to do with this body, mind or the world. You are separate from all these things, that spirit soul inside who is untouched by any of these things. When the Guru instructed that, it happened to him straight away. It happened to him. So you can see here, so it didn't take very long. He had the qualification because he had the Vairagyam in him. And in that process he happened to meet his spiritual master, whoever he may be. And the spiritual master has succeeded in delivering him from his ignorance. Vairagyam has helped. Vairagyam helped because that's why he was able to go and approach somebody. And in that state of Vairagyam, when the right spiritual master met him and instructed him about the truth, and immediately he had the benefit from that. This is the way spiritual life works. So, and why? Because he mentions there in the Bhagavadam that he was wandering around, that we had a danda with him. Dandi sannyasi he is. So that means he must have got involved in some danda sannyasam, he must have taken from somebody. So that whoever has given instructions to him must have spoken to him about this knowledge of the Atma, knowledge of the soul, isn't it? So, and he is travelling as a Paramahamsa Sannyasi. Paramahamsa Sannyasi. You will see there that Ityabhi Pretya Manasa Avandyo Dijasatamaham Unmichya Kadaya Grandin Shando Bichuramu Unmuni Sajajaramamimidam Samyadal Kendriya Anilaha Bichartam Nagaragraman Asango Alakshido Vishal Tavai Pramtambai Namai Pravayasam Bhikshu Avadodam Asajjanaha Drishtuavarya Bhavan Badra Vahvivi Paribhudivi. There, at the end, he is saying that, you see there, at the end of that, Bhikshu Gita is saying, Shri Bhagavan Vacha, Krishna is confirming to us that this Bhikshu is not an ordinary person. Why? He is in the Parivraja state. Parivrajaka state. That means he had Vairagyam and he had knowledge as well. That part is not spoken in detail in the Bhagavadam. This is the conclusion of Sridhara Swami. Sridhara Swami is saying there that he must have had spiritual instructions from someone. Must be his spiritual master, whoever it may be. All that part is not spoken here. But he's saying here, look at the verses, you will understand that. 58th verse if you look. Edam samasthaya paralpanishta adhyasidam purvatamayar maharshivi aham garishyami durandavaram tamo mukundhangri nishaiva eva. That I am now in that state, that paralpanishta stage I am now. To say that it's not possible even if you are detached from the world. Vairagyam alone is not sufficient. Knowledge is required. So he had the knowledge which had come to him by instructions from the Adhyasidam Purvatamayar Maharshavi. Rishis in the past has instructed us about this, which means Upanishad's knowledge. What else Rishis have instructed us in the past? Upanishadam. Is it not? So that Upanishad knowledge had come to him. That's what he's saying. Adhyasidam Purvatamayar Maharshavi. Purvatamayar Maharshavi. Previous Rishis have spoken about it and I have taken that as the shelter. And you could not take that into shelter simply because you become Vairagyam. Somewhere knowledge has also flown into him. Nirvidya nashtadravino gadaklama pravrajyagam pariyadamanamittham niragrudo asadbhiravi swadharmam akambilomam nirahagatham. The next verse is a confirmation of that. So you can see here that he has been instructed about the truth. Somebody has instructed the spiritual master, and that effect of that is that ajnanam or avidya has gone from inside. And said in the Jivan Muktananda Lahari, there is a book where it mentions there, by the instructions of the spiritual master, it can happen like this. It doesn't take a long time. So, just by instruction alone, ignorance is gone from inside. But we have to be ready for that first. That kind of vairagyam what he had, or control of mind, control of senses, all that has to happen. And at that time, Krishna will arrange that person to give us that final touch necessary. But we have to be ready for that first. So, that is what. Therefore, when the chit started shining, chittam gone. Chit started shining and chittam has gone. Just like Surya, when the sun rises, then if you ask the question,
the jnani, would he not have a mind of his own? They say, realize people, what they say about that is, it will be like, if the sun rises, would they not have a mind? This question always comes. Because it's an interesting question. Say you are self-realized, will there be a mind again after? That's a good question, isn't it? Or will it be mindless, which we are frightened about, isn't it? We like a good strong mind. But Shastram says that what will happen after self-realization? Would there be a mind? The answer to that is, when the sun rises, sometimes the moon is there, isn't it? You can see in some days, sun is shining, and the moon is also there somewhere. Not full moon, but you'll partially see as part of the moon. But that moon has no effect. The sun has got all the effect on us. That little moon on the sky has no effect on us. So similarly, here, it is the same situation. Mind will be there, but it has no effect on you. That's the important thing. That sun, because that sun is like knowledge, is shining inside, knowledge of the self. In that situation, the mind may be there, and it may be a sort of a little presence there, but it won't have any effect on you. And that's all what you need. That's all what you need. Because these are subtle things, it's difficult for us to precisely explain it also. Because you can imagine, when will the mind go? We know the mind goes away in deep sleep. Somewhere it's going. It comes back in the morning when you wake up. And then it gives you whole day trouble and then goes back again in the night to bed. It goes to bed with us, sleeps. So this mind, our point is that in the wakened state also we don't want it. In the dream state we don't want it. We don't want this influence of the mind. So Jnani, who has self-realized, he has got this sun shining inside. Knowledge of the soul is shining inside. Knowledge of the soul is compared to the sun. It is shining inside. But the darkness is not there from the moon. From the moon is present there, but it has no effect on us. Because sun is shining so strongly. It may be present there. So that is the answer they give. That is how books like Panchadashi, Vivekachudamani and all talk about it. They said your knowledge is there, but the moon is not affecting you. Moon is not affecting you. The mind is not bothering you anymore. It may be present there, may not be present there, but it does not bother you at all. Because after all, it's coming from the Chit Shakti. It's coming from the Chit Shakti. So once the sun rises, whether there is moon or not, nobody is going to give any attention to that moon. But sometimes you see this, isn't it? When the sun is shining, somewhere in the sky you will see the moon also, but no impact at all. So in the jnani also there may be a mind, but because of the powerful shining of the chit from behind, that this mind, whatever little mind he has got, it's only something to help him about few things in this world, what he need to know, and also using for a little bit of vyavaharam in this world, he will use it. That's all. Nothing more than that. He won't give attention to it very much. Little vyavaharam he has to do still here. For that purpose, that moon or this mind is still kept for a few little purposes. So, but he is always conscious of the force behind that, Adhishtanam, Chit Shakti. So our mind, and similarly, Alma, that awareness inside us, who we are, isn't it? Aham, aham, that awareness. And I am, that experience is also inside us. Experience is also inside us. So, when we say vritti, we say chitta-vritti, isn't it? Vritti means thought waves. Vritti means thought waves, isn't it? So, the thought waves are there, chitta-vrittis are there. Then there is inside us, there is this ahankara. Ego is also there. And apart from that, we also have the awareness in us of who we are, isn't it? Aham Bodham. So Aham Karam is there, Aham Bodham is there, and thought waves are also there. Thought waves are also there. So Ahankaram mainly comes when Vyavaharam begins. That's where Ahankaram starts working. Ahankaram starts moving when Vyavaharam begins. And this you can observe. Sometimes, say you are absorbed in something, studying some Bhagavad Gita or Bhagavadam, or engage in some work where you are completely focused on the work, you will see your Ahankaram is not there. You won't know the Ahankaram there. So there are instances in our daily life where Ahankaram is not operating. That you have to observe yourself. But as soon as something happens, your attention has moved away from the work, what you are absorbed in, that Ahankaram comes back. Ahankaram goes, I have to do this. But it comes back. So Ahankaram is a movement that happens inside when it's a kind of, they call it a movement or chalanam, vritti it is, and it comes when Vyavaharam begins. Only in Vyavaharam it comes very strongly. So that is why it's called karam, aham karam. Karam means that abhimanam, that ego comes in. So similarly, kriya karakam, aham karakam, all dvara karakam they are. So this ahankaram, you can see it's always taking birth, dissolving, taking birth, dissolving at different times. So where does it develop? Where does it take birth? Where does it remain? And where does it dissolve? This is the question, isn't it? So there are many moments in our life, daily life, where there is no ahankaram in us. Where there is no ahankaram in us. There are so many moments in our own life where there is no ahankaram in us. For the only thing is we don't think about that at that point in time. So only when somebody pokes some question to you, puts some question to you, or involve you in a conversation, only then this ahankaram comes. Is it not? Say you are left on your own, and you are not contacting with the world at all, you are completely free, you won't be very conscious of your own identity. Ahankaram won't be there. When ahankaram comes very quickly, when you are interacting with somebody, that's when ahankaram pops up straight away. So, and therefore, at many moments in life, it's not there. You can also observe that. Say, for example, you are sitting quiet in one place without doing anything. At that time, there is no ahankaram operating. It's hiding somewhere with the inside. And then somebody has come and knocked at the door. He says, who's that? You open the door. Oh, then conversation begins. Then I and he or I and she comes there. As soon as that I comes there, then ahankaram has started working. So ahankaram is like that. What I'm saying all this is the difference between ahankaram and ahambodham. It's a big difference between the two. So, for example, if you are absorbed in studying something, seriously you are studying something, you won't see the ahankaram playing any role there. You are just busy with the studies and it's going on. You are not even thinking about yourself. All you are absorbed in that message of what you are reading. You want to get that. But you are not thinking about that. Ahankaram is not operating. So this there you can see that ahamvrti, it movements is not there in those situations. But when ahankaram is like that, ahambodham is not like that. See that difference? Ahambodham, you are always conscious inside, isn't it? I am existing. I am. But awareness of ourselves will never go. It cannot leave us. Even if you want to, unless so that consciousness about awareness, in other words, it always exists. That's why it's called bodham, avabodham. Bodham it is, consciousness, isn't it? So so this awareness, not ahankaram, aham bodham, it is present in all the three states. Jagrat, Swapnam, Sushupti. In all the three states, it is present there. Ahankaram is not there, definitely not there in the deep sleep. It's definitely not there. Ahambodham is there. Ahambodham is there. But why it's not manifesting? Because of the tamoguna. That's why. It's not coming out and openly saying that bodham like you have in the vacant state. It's not there in the deep sleep in the similar way because of the tamogunam present there. But aham bodham has not gone. That is, the proof of that is, as soon as you wake up in the morning, you are saying that I had a good, comfortable sleep. I slept well. Who is bringing this information back? Aham bodham. And if he was not there, he could not report that when you wake up. Is it not? So these are the things to take notice of, that you will see in the Bhagavatam, this message is repeated again, 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 again. Only thing is, when this part comes, people think, it's something we don't understand, we leave it. Even this morning I was reading Chitrakedu's story. When Chitrakedu went to Lord Balaram spoke to him. You remember Chitrakedu's first visit was to Lord Balaram, isn't it? Srinatha Maharshi gave him the transcendental knowledge and told him, you chant this holy name, in 7 days' time you'll reach the spiritual world, he said. It happened. So he got there after 7 days and he went there. Krishna wasn't there, Balaram was there. So Balaram instructed him this knowledge, and if you read those verses, you will see this is exactly what Balaram is saying to him. That the Jagrat, Swapnam, Sushupti, three states, often you will notice this in the Bhagavatam. Krishna sends Uddhava to the gopis to talk about Jagrat, Swapnam, Sushupti. In the 47th chapter you can see that. So at some point in time, this knowledge of the self has to be understood properly. Not in a crooked way, correct, directly as the way Krishna explained it in the Bhagavatam. And that is why you start realizing jnanam and bhakti are not different. As soon as there is bhakti, there will be jnanam as well. Gopis who are not educated in Shastram, who are not performed any serious sacrifices, austerities, in spite of all that, Krishna felt gopis must know this, the connection of the soul with us. And therefore, in spite of all their bhakti inside, such a great devotees they were, Krishna still wanted to tell them about these three states, Jagrat, Swapnam, Sushupti. So similarly, you will see this everywhere in the Bhagavad. The only thing is, you've got to give some time and to search through that, and you'll find that there. So anyway, so here, in vacant state, dream state, deep sleep, in all these three states, this aham bodham is the adhishtanam. Adhishtanam means the basis. These three states, where is it happening? It's happening in the aham bodham, isn't it? You see, when the aham bodham is the foundation, and these three states are coming and going. But if three states are coming and going, it has to have some basis for that, where it is happening. And that is aham bodham. Jagrat, Swapnam, Sushupti, three states. Jagrat comes, it goes. Swapnam comes, it goes. Sushupti comes, it goes. All these three states are happening in the aham bodham, in that awareness. So therefore, aham bodham is behind everything hiding. Like the screen, it is hiding there. Like the screen, it's hiding there. So, once you have known that aham bodham, then you are free. Then you are free. So, the nature of that aham bodham is always in the liberated state. Mukti. Mukti, you see, liberated state is its nature. If you look into Bhagavatam, in the second canto, you will see there a verse. There he's saying that Sri Shuka Vacha, 10th chapter, 2:10. Atra sargo visarga chastanam poshanam, first verse. Poshanam udaya manundaram ishanu katha nirodho muktira ashrayam. That is the 10 topics that's discussed in the Bhagavatam. Dashamasya vishuddhyartham navanamiha lakshanam varnayam vimahalmanam shude arthena janjasam. Dashamasya vishuddhyartham navanamiha lakshanam. 10th canto is the essence of Bhagavatam. is 10th canto, because Krishna is present there. Navanamiha Lakshanam Varnayandi, and the 9 symptoms of that is explained by the Mahalpas. Shudenarthena Chanjasa. That has to be understood from Shruti, Upanishads and Vedam. It is a Vedic knowledge, he is saying, is coming through that 10th canto. Vedic knowledge is coming through the 10th canto. But it has been spoken in a way for ordinary people to Shudena Arthena Janjasa, to get some access to that. Otherwise it is not possible. So if you go in that way, it says what happens in different cantos. Buddha Matra Indriya Diyam Janma Sarga Muda Ahrida Brahmano Guna Vaishamyal Visarga Pavirushastada Smrida Siddhir Vaikunda Vijayam Poshanam Tadanugraham Manyundarani Saddharmam Udaya Karma Vasanam Avadarani Charitam Hare Chasi Anuvartinam Sadami Shakata Prokta Tana Khyanupa Brahmhita. Then in the 6th verse you will see Nirodasya Anushayanam Altmana Sahashaktibhi Muktir Hitva Anyadha Arubam Swarupena Vyavasthiti. Muktir Hitva Anyadha Arubam Swarupena Vyavasthiti. That is called Mukti. Anyadha Arubam Hitva Swarupena Vyavasthiti Mukti. This is the definition of Mukti. Bhagavatam's definition of Mukti. Anyadarubam tektva surubena vyavasthiti mukti. What is anyadarubam? Anyadarubam means all these designations we have taken in this world with different bodies, man, woman, husband, wife, engineer, philosopher, politician, businessman. Everything, for American, European, Indian, Englishman, all these are anyadarubam. They are all anyadarubam. Rich man, poor man, good man, bad person. This is all anyadarubam. When you have given up everything, anyadarubam hitva swarubena vyavasthiti mukti. If you have given up all these designations and if you are established in your swarupam, that is called mukti, and that's the definition of Bhagavatam. Muktirhit anyadarubam swarubena vyavasthiti. It's a famous statement in the Bhagavatam. So, here. So, when those who have studied Shastram very well, in a proper way, in the parampara way, in the traditionally, and those who have developed that habit of Vedanta Vicharam, how to absorb in the Vedantic way of life, I know we are not going to do that, but why I am saying all this thing is that there does exist something like that. It's not that there is a strong force behind it in this training, those who had that and who had lived in that way. And then, but not only that, they lived that life also. Shrotriyam Brahmanishtam. Remember those two words. Shrotriyam means that they have heard the Shruti in the proper way. Shruti has to be heard in the proper way. And those who have heard that, they will be in Brahmanishta. Their Nishta will be very good. They won't easily wither away. They won't bloop. They won't fall off like that. Because they are established in the truth properly. Shrotriyam Brahmanishtam. They have heard it and they are established in that properly. So, and those who had that contact with such spiritual masters who are established in that way, then they will be enlightened in the proper way also. They'll be enlightened in the proper way. Then once you have reached that state, then you will know this thing called Jivan Mukti. Jivan Mukti means liberated while living in this world. That's called Jivan Mukti. Or the other word called Videha Mukti. Videha Mukti means after leaving the body, getting liberated. Or Jivan Mukti or Videha Mukti also says that by living in this world itself, you are not in contact with the body. Videha Mukti. Neither of them is true. This is only you have to analyze it why it is not true. Because you can see here that Shastram is concerned. If you were not liberated before, you are not going to get liberated tomorrow. Actually, we are always liberated state.
But what we have got here is avidya, insight. Ajnanam is what we have got. So to say that we are not liberated is a wrong statement. We are always liberated state it is. So videha mukti, the word they have used there, means that after death it may happen, that's after leaving the body, isn't it? But mukti, Bhagavad is saying, mukti itself is the very nature of Atma. Atma is always in the mukti state. Atma is never bound. What is bound then? Our ahankaram is bound. Ahankaram is bound with all the vasanas and the sukham, dukham, good, bad. These are all bondage for us. So ahankaram is what is bound, not Atma. Not Atma. So, so samadhi, that state, that so those people who are very advanced in a, and who have come in the best traditions of the spiritual life, from the Vedic way of life, that and those who are analyzing things in a much higher level, they will not even take initiations, diksha. They will not even take that. But that happens to extremely rare people. Extremely rare cases. They don't need it. Because by very birth itself, they have this higher knowledge they are bringing from the previous life, that Atma is never bound. If Atma is not bound, what is there to take initiation for? You see that they are, and this, that of course is exceptional cases. Exceptional cases. So they will not do that. They will not do anything for the sake, because that already that state is present in them. Because samadhi is the nature of Atma. Atma's nature is like that. So, and this awareness all the time in consciousness, awareness inside, that I am, that awareness inside, that is a samadhi state. That's a samadhi state. Only thing is, nirvanam is another word used for that. And mukti is another nature of that. Mukti, nirvanam, samadhi. These are words, different words in different ways people are using it. That's all. But in experience level, it all means one and the same thing. Buddha will call it as nirvanam. Lord Buddha will say it's nirvanam. Bhagavan will say call it as mukti. And Upanishad will say call it as samadhi. Whichever way you call it, in experience it's one and the same thing. That means not connected with the body. Remaining in the platform of the self. That's all it is. So, and similarly, when we talk about Vaikuntham, Kailasam, it's all like that. It's a state it is, that suppose you are a devotee of Shiva, you are in Kailasam, in that state. Vishnu, you are in Vaikuntham, in that state. Instead of thinking that it's all physically existing places where we have to travel millions of miles to get there, and plane will come at the end to take us there. The plane didn't turn up on time, then you get upset about the time, isn't it? You've done all this and still the plane didn't come. So all those things is concepts that's been created to make it easier for us. But once you study a little bit deeper level, you will know that that Vaikuntham, Kailasam and similarly Golokam, everything is a state that is to happen inside. If you have reached that state here, you don't have to be, you, we are thinking that wherever you look, Yamuna river is flowing and Govardhanam is there, Radharani is there, all the gopis are there, cowherd boys are there. We make pictures and all that, all these things to make it more familiarized with it for that purpose. And to think that, or at least you will have some hope, tomorrow after death I'll be going there. But then again you still have some doubts, what will I be doing there? After getting there, isn't it? So, but even it, let it be so. There's no harm in that to make it easier, because it attracts people to take to spiritual life. But once you come to spiritual life and start seeing the knowledge behind it, then you start appreciating why these different concepts are spoken like this. Like you can see in the Vedic tradition itself, Ramanuja Sampradayam does not accept our conclusions, is it not? For them, Vaikuntham is the supreme destination. Lord Narayana or Mahavishnu, Lakshmi Devi, that's their perfection of spiritual life. For us, it is Krishna, Radharani, Golokam, in that way.
And there are devotees of Shiva who consider Kailasam as the highest realization. So in realization level, they all exist. They are all true. So therefore, this Vaikuntham Kailasam is nothing but the manifestations of this realization, what we are talking about in the liberated state. Mukti hitvanyadharyupam surupena vivasthiti. When you are established in yourself, it could be in Kailasam, it could be in Vaikuntham, it could be in Golokam, elsewhere. Similarly, there is Devi Dhamam, devotees of Sri Parvati. They have her abode there, supreme abode, which if you read Devi Bhagavatam, which is much bigger than our Srimad Bhagavatam, glorifies Devi Bhagavatam, Sri Parvati's abode, Devi's abode. And that abode, all Devi's devotees wants to be there in that abode. So, Ubadi, and similarly, so Kailasam Vaikuntham is all nothing but the Swarupam of that realization. Of that realization, Swarupam that is. Similarly, Shiva, Vishnu, all these are the Swarupam of that. Swarupam of that. Ubadi, if you take the Ubadi away, and without any Ubadi, without touched by the mind and the body, that means mind and body is called corruption. It's a corruption in the self, is it not? In consciousness, body and the mind is a corruption. It is a corruption, without any corruption. Simply if you are established in your experience of awareness alone, then that is that divine state. That is that divine state. Unfortunately, when you don't look into this side of the Bhagavatam, what Bhagavatam is talking about, we will think in a different way. We won't look at this side. We will think that everything is for us is physical, time and space, and based on that. But that will always create difficulties inside. But what they have to say to us is that in consciousness, when it is not corrupted by the body, it's a corruption. Body is a corruption. Mind is a corruption. Body, mind, intelligence, ego, senses, they're all corruptions on us. And once the corruptions are removed and it is free from everything, then that existence, that is that liberated state, and it's already available to us. And that is the reason that those who are separated themselves from the body, you are free. Come out of the body means come out of the mind, intelligence, ego, senses, everything. Then you are a free bird to fly anywhere. Dehastho bhi na dehastha. Krishna is saying to Uddhava, isn't it? So, and that thing, it is called Bhudavastu Vishayam. Bhudavastu Vishayam means, it has already happened. It has already happened, already liberated. So this liberated state of Atma, Bhudavastu Vishayam it's called, you are already carrying that inside, a liberated state which is of the Atma, nature of the Atma, it's already present inside. And you are carrying that, and you are going outside and begging for this. You are begging for this. So how do we know that it is present inside? Because it's only due to the presence of that liberated state of the Atma, you are experiencing this awareness inside. Aham, aham, aham. Aham asmi, aham asmi. That awareness, what you are experiencing at the moment, is a manifestation of that liberated state of the Atma that is present inside. And which we address as Shiva or Vishnu and you will see in the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada has quoted that verse, Tad Vishnu Paramam Padam Sada Pashyandi Suryayoho Sada Pashyandi Divivi Chakshura Tadam. Somewhere I think it is in the 7th chapter, in the one of the purports, Prabhupada mentions about that abode. He says the abode, isn't it? That he says, Tad Vishnu Paramam Padam Sada Pashyandi Suryayo Divivi Chakshuratatam. From one Upanishad, I think it is from Shvetashvatara Upanishad or Chandogya Upanishad, Prabhupada has taken that and he has, talking about Krishna's abode, he mentions that. I think it is in the 7th chapter. So when you read that, you can see that Prabhupada is also pointing out to that state. More than the physical abode. More than the physical abode. I'm not sure what it is now. In the in that seventh chapter, there are a few quotations from the Upanishads. Prabhupada is mentioned in the purport. Like you can see there in the seventh verse. Vedaham edam purusham mahandam aditya varnam tamasa parastad tame viridvadi mrityum eti nanya pandha vidyade ainaya yasmat param nabaram asti kinchil yasmat nanyo na javosti kinchil vriksha eva stabdo divitishtati egas ten edam purnam purushena sarvam. There is Shedashara Upanishad. And let me see. Vedantam evam purusham mahandam tadvishnu paramam padam sadapashyanti surayoho sadapashyanti surayoho divivi chakshuradadam. Anyway, we'll look at that later. So, somewhere it is there. Anyway, forget about that. So, what does it say? Vedam, this is Vedam from the Upanishads. Vedam, Vedic Suri, Suri means Rishis, they are saying to us that their eyes are always open. Which one says that? That Tad Vishnu Paramam Padam. The Rishis are saying, their eyes are open and they are looking at that place. Which one? Tad Vishnu Paramam Padam. Vishnu's abode, supreme abode. Sada Pashyanti Suryayoho. Suri means those who have realized, the Rishis. Sada Pashyanti, they are always seeing that. They may be physically here, but they are seeing that abode all the time. Tad Vishnu Paramam Padam Sada Pashyanti Suryayoho. Sada Pashyanti Suryayoho. And how is that? How do they see that? Divivi Chakshuradadam. There is no interruptions in their vision. There is nothing, no other thought waves are coming and interrupting that. Constantly they are seeing that supreme abode of Vishnu. Supreme abode of Vishnu. Without any vichiti. Vichiti means interruptions or breakup. So, what is that Paramapadam? Paramapadam means that Vishnupadam. That Vishnupadam nature is that it is purely Chitshakti. Chinmatra Swarupam. Chitshakti. That's all it is there. And that is the place where this Ahangaram is taking birth and where Ahangaram is dissolving. All jivas are ahangarams that is born there and dissolving there. But vastu behind all these things is that abode where it is happening. And he mentions there that aditya varnam tamasa parastar. And you will see Krishna mentions this. Where? 13th chapter. If you look, you will see there. 18th verse. 13:18. Jyodisham abhida jyodi. Remember? Jyodisham Abhidat Jyodi, 13:18. The 13th chapter is so important because it is the one which gives you some conception about the realizations. 13:18, you will see there that Jyodisham Abhidat Jyodi, Tamasa Param Uchyate, Jnanam Jnayam Jnana Gamyam Hridi Sarvasya Vishtidam. Remember? We talked about this verse when we discussed that chapter. Jyodisham abhida jyodi tamasa paramuchyade jnanam yayam jnana gamyam hridi sarvasya vishtidam. So, where is the realization of Vaikuntham, Kailasam, Golokam? Inside. Once you realization comes inside, then you are there. It is not in Vedam, you are not where physically your material body is present. That is not where you are. Where your consciousness is, if it is in the Jyodisham Abhidat Jyodi Tamasa Paramuchyade, you have transcended everything and reached that state, then you are in Golokam, you are in Vaikuntham, you are in Kailasam. Doesn't matter. Physically you may be anywhere. Physically means this gross material body, because you are identifying with the material body, you are giving importance to it. Jnanam, Yeyam, Jnanagamyam, Hridi Sarvasya Vishtidam. He is the source of light in all luminous objects. He is beyond the darkness of matter and is unmanifested. He is knowledge, he is the object of knowledge, and he is the goal of knowledge. He is knowledge. He is knowledge. And he is the object of knowledge. And he is the goal of knowledge. He is situated in everyone's heart. What can I say more? Is this not enough proof that what we are talking about? Krishna is very forthright on that, isn't it? Jyotisham abhidha jyoti tamasa paramuchyate jnanam eyam jnanagamyam sarvasya vishtidam. This sarvasya vishtidam. So, and that itself is knowledge, the knowledge, that the vastu that has to be known, and the goal also. Ultimately, it's the same. And Hridi, in everyone's heart, he is present. He is present in everyone's heart. That means he is always liberated state, is it not? That's what it is supporting that. Because he is present in everyone's heart, each and every one of you is always actually in the liberated state. But due to ajnanam avidya, due to our identification with the body and the mind, we consider ourselves as jivas, conditioned and suffering from all the miseries of this world. And moment we get back to that state, you experience that jyoti, jyotisham abhidha jyoti, and you are experiencing that. And nityanubhuta swarupaha, kevalanubhavananda swarupaha, nityobalabdhi swarupaha. In Bhagavatam you will see all these things. Everywhere. When talking about Rishabhadev, Shuka Brahmarshi told, if you look into the first canto, the last verse in the Rishabhadev story, fifth canto. Nityanubhudam, that's the sixth chapter. 5, 6, 19. Nityanubhudam, nijalaba nivurta trishna, shreyasya dadrajaya chirasutta buddhehi, logasaya karunaya bhayam alpa logam, akhyanamo bhagavade krishabhaya dasmai. Krishabhadev was a liberated soul, and he showed us that state. Akhyanamo bhagavade rishabhaya tasmai. Why did he exhibit that to us? Logasaya karunaya bhayam alpa logam. That spiritual world, he showed it to us out of his mercy. What that spiritual world is? Logasaya karunaya bhayam alpa loka. Akhyanamo bhagavade rishabhaya tasmai. And to that Rishabhadev, Shiva Brahmarshi is saying, I am paying my obeisances to him. Who showed in this world, while here, he showed the spiritual world to us. That realized state, that is the spiritual world. He's realized the state. Nobody, but from our eye, our conditioned state, when we look at him, we consider him as a mad person. Is it not? We were thinking that he was intoxicated, mad, because he was walking around without clothes on, and he was holding one large stone inside the mouth. He didn't want to speak anymore. He was closing, I'm not allowing the body to function anymore. And then when he gave up his body, you will see when he was giving up his body, he anima ishwari siddhi, all they came to see him. They wanted to serve him, being liberated person. And he said, I don't want any of your services, you can go. He sent them away. Anima, alekima, mahima, agarima, all those ones. He sent them off. And while leaving, what did they do? They deposited some of the good things on him. And therefore, even when he has passed urine, stool, everything from the body, the smell from that was miles around, which was very, very, very good for people who were smelling that. So, what was his state at that time? Nityayana Buddha, Nijalaba, Nivutta, Trishna, Shreyasya tadrajanaya chira supta buddhehe. That was the state of realized state. So, in the Bhagavatam, that is one place. Then, when you go into the 10th canto, when Vasudev started prayers to Krishna. That is the most interesting prayers in the Bhagavatam, because a son was born after praying so much. And when the son comes, he is saying to the son that you are, he says that, it is in the third chapter, I think. Yeah. Already, Brahma had given a fantastic prayer before, Garbhastuti, in the womb. Brahma said to Krishna, Satyavradam Satyavaram Trasatyam Satyasya Yonim Nihidanja Satye Satyasya Satyam Hrdasatya Netram Satyalpagam Tuam Sharanam Prabhanam. There's a whole prayer in the second chapter while inside the womb. Garbhastuti, it's called Garbhastuti. Where Brahma comes with all the demigods and praying to Krishna and glorifying Krishna. Brahma's glorifications. Then in the third chapter, appearance happened. Krishna appeared. So after appearance, Vasudev is the first person to whom Krishna has appeared, isn't it? From Vasudev it gets carried away to Devaki Devi. So Vasudev's prayers at that time, Vididosi bhavan sarshal purusha pragrade para kevala anubhavananda swarupam sarva buddhi drak. A little baby who has just come, Vasudev is saying to him, kevala anubhavananda swarupa sarva buddhi drak. The word itself is longer than the person. Kevala anubhavananda swarupam, that's what you are, he's saying to Krishna. Kevalanu Bhavananda Swarupam Swarupam Sarva Buddhi Draka. Kevalanu Bhavananda Swarupam. If you say that, it is that you are that pure awareness. Kevalanu Bhavananda means what? Anubhavam, that Anandam, which is Kevalam in Anubhava Anandam, which is our Swarupam. Which is our Swarupam, which is your Swarupam, Krishna Swarupam. Krishna Swarupam is Kevalanu Bhavananda Swarupam. Kevalanu Bhavananda Swarupam, which is our Swarupam also, but we have lost it. We have got this Swarupam now, what we have got, and suffering from that. So, anyway, so there, Rishabhadev said that, Vasudeva has repeated that again. And the only sad thing is that if this is all our Swarupam, if this is all our Swarupam, In Hastavanaka Gita, he said, Nityobalabdhi Swarupoham Atma. He mentioned there, isn't it? Nityobalabdhi Swarupoham Atma. Eternally, that's my Swarupam. He's saying that there's no body for him either. Like Rishabhadev. He's also saying, I don't have a body. Nityobalabdhi Swarupoham Atma. Atma is my Swarupam. But then the question is coming there, if it is like that, why there is no effect of any of that in us? Why are we like this? Shastram is saying one thing and we are something different. Shastram is saying, stressing this point, that Nityobalabdhi Swarupoham Atma, Kevalanu Bhavananda Swarupam. Shastram is stressing this to us all the time and we don't have any effect or any impact on us. We are still as we are. Why is it like that? Only reason for that is we didn't take notice of these statements, didn't give attention to it. That's why it has happened like this. We gave attention to other things, to the world, to the body, and to all other things. Only because of that, this situation has happened. So, even when you close your eyes, you notice yourself. Where is all your attention? It's in the mind, isn't it? Suppose my eyes are open, then my attention is in the world. If I close my eyes like this, completely, then my attention is in the mind. It's not in the Atma again. So even when eyes are closed, either I am concerned about my mind, what emotions are coming there, or what chitavrittis are coming there, and or even at the very best, if a little sattvagunam comes in the mind, your attention will go to that sattvagunam, is it not? When sometimes you feel good, some way you are feeling good, what they call it is not the feel-good factor.
not because the property prices have gone up. So everybody is saying that there is a feel-good factor. That's not that what they are talking about. This feel-good factor is that due to sattvagunam inside. Suppose shanti. Sattvagunam means shanti. And prakasham, enlightenment. All these are symptoms of sattvagunam. To some extent you are feeling happy inside. Even at that time, your attention won't go to the soul. Attention will go into that mind still. Oh, I'm feeling good there. That means that you have never crossed the barrier of the mind. You're always floating between the mind and the body, or sometimes in the intelligence in this way. Never able to escape from that grip of the mind. So, that sukham or happiness that's coming from sattvagunam, that's where your shraddha is going. Your attention is going there. So, this awareness or kevalanu bhavananda surubham is beyond all these things. Adhishtanam it is. And that is where awareness is present. Kevalanu bhavananda surubham. And that awareness or existence is unknown to us, but instead that is the place where astitvam or chit, shakti or astitvam or awareness, sachidanandam, and the bhikshu managed to catch hold of that. Bhikshu succeeded in getting hold of that instead of holding on to the mind and the body. We are holding on to the mind. Most of the time we are all in the mind. Is it not? What goes on in the mind is what's going on in us, inside us. What is this thinking about that. All emotions. And mind is fed with all the people around, the world around, what's going on in the world. It goes into the mind. Media does that. And then the mind starts scrutiny of everything. So most of the time, you are in the mind or in the world. So that is why. But Bhikshu managed to escape from that mind and catch this awareness or astitvam inside. And so Janaka says there that then by mercy of my spiritual master, Janaka says, somehow or the other, he says, I don't know, I got it back. I caught that back again. Kudaschit kaushala deva paramalma vilokyade, he mentions. Janaka says this in the Yoga Vasishtam. Something he says, the spiritual master instructed me and I was able to get it back. That's how Janaka puts it. And if you ask me, how did I get it back? I don't have an answer, he says. That's why spiritual life is. Spiritual life is like that. You can't give a definite answer to anything in spiritual life. Nobody can tell you, suppose if you do this, you'll be realized tomorrow. Nobody can tell you that. Because a lot of other things are factors which controls your self-realization. The three modes of material nature and your own prarabdham, vasanas inside, all of them are contributing factors, and above all, Krishna's grace. Above all. So, it's difficult to say what will finally make you released. That's why Janaka also said, I got it because my guru has instructed me and I managed to get it back. He says like that. And myself do not know how it happened. So, so Paramatma, Krishna is present in everyone's heart in the form of this awareness, isn't it? So, in there, and that awareness, Bhikshu also got it back, that awareness. He also got it back. And that is how Bhikshu is saying here, nothing can disturb me anymore in this world. They're all telling their experiences, is it not? Janaka is saying that, and Bhikshu is also saying exactly the same thing. And we have seen that Prahlada says the same thing. And also Dromaraj says the same thing. Bhishma says the same thing. They are all saying that I have got it back. We have got it back. And when they have got it back, they are saying that nothing can disturb us anymore. Nothing can touch us anymore. We have come out of this. So, then, and in that new empire where I am living, there is no enemies there. There is no enemies there. And normally our empire, whatever empire we build here, that doesn't last very long, isn't it? Afterwards it will all fizzle out. But this empire, he says, I will never lose it, says Bhikshu. Bhikshu says, this empire, I will never lose it. Why? So somebody asked the question, how can you guarantee that you will never lose it? Because Bhikshu says, even if I want, I cannot experience distress anymore I cannot experience it anymore. To that extent, I am free now. Even if you want to impose some distress in me, that distress cannot have any impact on me. Vidyarani Swamiji, he mentions in the Panchadashi the statement, Anichannabhi Vimuchyade. He says here that Anichannabhi Vimuchyade. Anichannabhi Vimuchyade means that from now on, I don't even want liberation, he says there. Because if you say like that, sometimes he says you may get liberated in that process. Anichannabhi Vimuchyade. A similar verse is also in the Naishkarma Siddhi book. You will see there. Anichannabhi Vimuchyade. Means that if you have experienced it somehow and got to that state, liberated state, then even if you don't want it, you got it. Even if you don't want it, even if you think that I'm not going to get it, it has come on its own. Because mukti, what we have to remember here is, mukti is always with the alma. Soul is always liberated. So when you say conditioned soul, it's a wrong statement. How can you condition alma? Because if you can condition alma, then you cannot liberate alma. Alma's quality is, it's always in the liberated state. Nitya, Shuddha, Buddha, Mukta, Swarupam. That is it. What is conditioned is, Ahangaram is the one that is conditioned. Conditioning is for the Ahangaram, not for the soul. If you consider soul as Alma, that's another thing. If you call Alma as the soul, then Alma can never be conditioned. There is no question of conditioning Alma. That is, Vedantam is very firm on this one particular point. That their point is that that tarati shokam atmavit, Upanishad says, that simple benefit that you get released from the suffering and the misery of this world if this realization gets back to us. And we don't need anything else. In the Bhagavatam, you will see atyandiya dukkha navarti. In the 11th canto, when the nine sages, they ask, King Nimi asked the question, what is the atyandiya dukkha navarti? Ultimately, how to free from oneself from this? And the same thing what Buddha was also inquiring after. All great philosophers also are inquiring after this. Where is that? Because that is the swarupam of alma. It is not going to come from outside. Because it's not something that you can create by doing something about it. Because if you are going to create that, if it is not there now, if you are going to be created in the future, sometime in the future, you are going to lose it. This is the Vedantam's strong point. What they are saying is, if liberation and satya means that eternity, knowledge, bliss, if all these things are not there in the alma now, then it cannot happen later. If it is going to happen later, it can again go. This is the strong thing on the Vedantam. Vedantam won't accept, no matter whatever you may say against it, Vedantam is very firm on this. If liberation, eternity, nityam, that purity, shuddha, shuddha means pure, untouched by any thought waves, chitavrti, ragam, dvesham, emotions, everything, shuddham. Buddham, buddha means always conscious, pure, always conscious it is, consciousness. Muktam, always liberated. If these four things are not present in the alma now, it cannot happen tomorrow. It's already there. Unfortunately, our problem is that we have this subtle body, vasanas and karmam, prarabdham and everything, and this gross body, everything. All this is polluted or corruptions have come, and this corruption that we are fighting against. Not we are fighting for clearing the alma. Alma is always clear. Its existence is pure. Existence is eternal, and it's always fully conscious, and it's always liberated. Nothing can make it dirty
or contaminate Atma. Atma is in a pure state. This is the important point Vedanta is saying there, that if you don't have it now, it's not going to come tomorrow from somewhere. So that misconception, we have to take it away, because this logic is very strong in the Vedanta. Vedanta's logic, that is, if you think that it's not there now, and in the future it's going to come, then it may again happen that you may lose it. Because it's something coming and going. Coming and going is not acceptable in the Bhagavad Gita. Coming and going is not right. That is what the Nasadeva Vidyade Bhavo is saying. Nasadeva Vidyade Bhavo, na bhavo vidyade sada, ubhayoravidrashtvandam stanayo tattvadarshimi. Rishis found out this. Rishis are saying to us, if it is Atma's nature is eternal blissful knowledge, then it has to be there all the time with Atma. Not that you can lose it today and get it back tomorrow. And they're saying, if it is like that, then it can go again. Therefore it is not like that, it's always there. This is their conclusion, and Krishna is also confirming that with that verse, isn't it? So, so that is our Swarupam. Our Swarupam is that. So, and the symptom of that is what we are experiencing in the form of awareness. Aham, 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 that awareness. So, only due to our existence, in other words, only due to our ignorance, ashraddha, because we didn't have proper attention given to that. We gave attention to the body, mind and the world, and therefore we have these problems, what we have at the moment. You gave all attention to that. At least, if it is there today, because eternally it will be there, because all time is present moment. It has to happen now, right at this moment when we are speaking, the attention should be there, not anywhere else, not in the body, not in the mind. If it is there, and it will be there forever, if it is there, if it gets there. Because all the time, all time is present moment. You know about the time, we spoke about many times before. We break the time into three, past, present and the future. If you are talking about past and if you are talking about future, it has no meaning. It has no meaning. So, grammar, these three types of times exist, isn't it? Past, present and the future. But what's important there is, in your experience, you cannot experience past, can you? You cannot experience future also. All you can experience now is the present. Only present you can always experience, nothing else. Past you can't experience, future also you can't experience. Past is all now, if you look, what's past? All in the memory, something in the memory. You were born in a particular place, and you had certain friends at that time, and a certain society you lived, and certain family members were there at that time. You say your father, mother, all these are memory now. In your present it's not there, is it not? They are all in the memory. Some of them have left and gone. If you say about your father, those who have lost your father, father is just in the memory. What other connection has it got? Just in the memory. And all your uncles, aunts, granddads, grandmothers, all of them with whom you had some experience, is not in experience anymore. It's all in the memory. Similarly, about future if you look, so many ideas are working in your mind about future. This will happen, that will happen. I will retire, I'll get my pension, I'll do this, I'll do that, I'll go on holidays, I'll enjoy my retired life. People are imagining all these things in their head. Is it not? Everybody is enjoying. One day it will all going to be fantastic. So waiting for that one day. So that is future. All in the imagination. It's all imagination. It has no reality. Past has no reality. Future has no reality. Past is all in the memory. Future is all imagination. What is real then? Real is present. Where you are now, where, what state you are, that's what is reality. Whatever state that is. So, so therefore, then, if you catch this understanding, and if you do reflection on that, it is a very amazing and a very sharp realization that is. This realization that present is most important thing. Future has no meaning, past has no meaning. If you have that in your consciousness all the time, that, and it is a very, very subtle realization. This realization is a very subtle realization. But we don't have it. We may hear this, but very next moment you will think about future. What's going to happen? What I have to do for tomorrow? For my bread and butter, or my work, or my family, or I'll go, it'll go that way. Again, future, thinking about future. And sometimes you'll notice yourself that when there is not a lot of thoughts about the future, you are sitting quietly in one place, you'll be thinking about the past, what all happened. So it's always between past and future, never living in the present. Never living in the present, and that is the problem. That is the problem. And therefore, past, nobody can experience it again. That past is gone. And that moment is gone. And the future has not come yet. It hasn't come yet. It has not come means, it has not come in your experience yet. So, everything in the past is in the memory, and everything in the future is expectations, unknown, imagination it is. Everything is like that. So, when when does it become truth something? When it becomes truth is, you can see here, only in the present. It is the truth, only in the present it is the truth. Only in the present something is truth. Not in the past or in the future, it's not truth. So, past is all the past times, future is the future time which is going to come in the future. So you can say, past is that thing which has gone away. The present that has gone away is the past. And future is that thing which is going, the present that's going to come. You see that? Present is that thing which is going to come later. So, but experience is only in the present. Not in the past, not in the future. It's only in the present. So, if we want to get hold of the truth, which Krishna is talking about, Bhikshu is talking about, there is a technique mentioned. Not technique in the Vasishtam, Yoga Vasishtam, it says there. What did he say? Kaushalam. Kaushalam means, what is that Kaushalam? Kaushalam means that smartness, that capacity, that to remain always in the present. Only then you can catch the truth. To always remain in the present. Never allowing the mind to go into memory or to go into imagination. Means to stop all the chitavritti. That's the solution. Yoga Vasishtam, Vasishtha Maharshi says to Ramachandra this. That is yogam. Kaushalam, that kaushalam is this, the secret. Not to live in the past, memory, or not to live in the future, imagination, but to always to remain in the present. Always to remain in the present. And that means, if you do not have any thought waves coming, then you can remain in the present state, and purely in the I am, that awareness, ahamasmi, satta, what Krishna addresses that, and remaining that. And there is no thoughts. There is no thoughts there. And there is no chitavritti. And the Vasishtha Maharshi's words, Vartamanam anayasam bhajet, budham bhavishyada abhajan, and yadi chittam achittadam. He says like that. Says, Vartamana anayasam bhajet. That Vartamanam anayasam bhajet. Without too much of effort, if you remain in the present, he says there, that means to remain in the present, that means not allowing the chitavritti to come back from the past. Then, bhūdam bhavishyada abhajan. Bhūdam bhavishyada abhajan. That means not allowing the mind to operate in the future, about the future, about the future. Like everybody is anxious about the future, what's going to happen, isn't it? As you get older, you're always thinking, what will be the future? That's why we send the children to school, because of what will be the future. What will happen to their future, they will say. We send them there. So,
we have that problem and we bring that problem to them also. And slowly we tell them that if you don't study hard and get all your A stars in every subject, then you will be useless in this world. And over a period of 10 years or 15 years, we have put this into their head. And then when they come out, they will also tell the same thing what we are saying now. Ultimately, they will repeat the same thing, isn't it? That, oh, what will happen in the future? Career building, all these things starts with that. So what can you do? The fact is, Vasishtham is saying that Bhudam Bhavishyana Abhajan. Don't take Bhudam, future, past or the future seriously, because it will go between these two, past and the future, like a pendulum. Yadi Chittam Achittadam. If the Chittam goes away from that Achittadam, Chittam will become Achittam. There won't be any more thought waves. Mind will become not mind anymore, Chinmatra Vastu. And pure awareness, Bodham, all you have to recognize for that. To do that, all you have to do is to recognize the presence of Bodham, awareness, Aham, inside all the time. To hold on to that understanding. This will only come by constant practicing it all the time. This is what this self-inquiry means, isn't it? That constantly knowing who we are. We're not the body, not the mind, we're not the intelligence. I'm not this body. Body is not mind. Body is not meant for enjoyment. In this way, slowly if we move away from the body, then you will come to this understanding firmly. So, in the sampradayam state, if you have that proper spiritual master, and if a disciple has come to that state, simply by his instructions, it will happen to him. And the same thing through the process of self-inquiry. Alternatively, in the bhakti process, the choice is sharanagati. Surrendering to Krishna and leaving it to Krishna everything. So you can see from this, bhakti means nothing but surrender. Isn't it? The same thing what you will inquire through self-inquiry, this process, what you will realize, that same experience you can have in bhakti by sharanagati. There the process difference is that you are simply handing over everything to Krishna. Whatever Krishna does to me, does to you or does to me, no complaint. Accepting it without any complaint. You have to come to that state. If you are complaining, it means there is no surrender. That's simple, isn't it, to understand? Then you will say, oh no, why Krishna has put me into this? I have gone done everything to please Krishna, but I don't think he is listening to me. You can make any logic you want, but the fact is that if there is proper sharanagati, surrender, then you can't complain about anything in life after that. Anything that happens, you have to accept it this way. Why it has happened is, Krishna must have decided for my benefit. He must have thought it is good for this to happen for me. He has a plan and that plan is working. I don't have a plan. He has the plan. If he is doing something to me, he has done it with some good motive, good intentions. It will only benefit me. In my view, today it may be trouble. I may be facing problems. But in the ultimate level, it is beneficial. That's why Krishna has done this. And that is why I have no complaint about it. So you got to have that acceptance inside. Only then you can say that there is sharanagati. Sharanagati is not a ritual. For example, if you set up a few bricks here and set up a fire here, and you put banana into it and all the flowers and every rice into it and say that I've gone through the initiation and surrendered, you won't get surrendered like that. That's not surrender. Surrender is this state, sharanagati. Sharanagati state, where irrespective of you had the fire sacrifice or not, inside if you are constantly accepting all problems in life, one after the other, Krishna will put you through. And when any problem comes, accepting that is Krishna's decision, I have no complaints. Maharshi used to say it in a different way. What you like, I like. That's how he puts it. Maharshi says, what you like, I like. Then there is no problem. Whatever you like, that's what I like. Not that you have to like what I like. I will accept whatever you gives to me. Whatever you like, I like it. That's what he used to say.
So, Jnani, when he is properly surrendered, he will say exactly the same thing, Sharanagati. Sharanagati means that these are all subtle things and it has to be practiced on a daily basis in life. Then you will find a shelter in Krishna, in that way. Otherwise there is no shelter. Simply by, I've done a lot of sadhana and all that, that is good. Sadhana is all to keep the thought waves away. But apart from that, this realization is important. So, Bhudam Bhavija Dushkritam. You will see this again mentioned in the Manisha Panchakam in a different way. There it is, says there, in the Manisha Panchakam, you will see that
Shashwannashwarameva Vishwamakhilam Nishchityavacha Guru Nityam Brahma Nirandaram Mrishadam Nurvyaja Shandalmana Bhudam Bhavi Chadushkradam Pradahadasam Minmaye Pavage Prarabdhaya Samarpidam Sovapu Ityesha Manisha Mama.
That is that. What he is saying here is, Manisha Vajagam, Ajari Swami says there,
Bhudam Bhavi Chadushkritam Pradahadasam Minmaye Pavakaha.
Bhudam Bhavi, past and future, I have. Bhudam Bhavi, all of that I have handed over to Krishna. Past and the future, I have handed over to Krishna. And then, Prarabdhaya Samarpidam Babu, so Babu, my own body, I have handed it over to Prarabdham. See? Prarabdhaya Samarpidam So Babu, my own body, I have handed over to Prarabdham. Past and the future, I don't know, I have handed it over to Krishna. And I'll remain free. Ityesha Manisha Mama. So this is the way. This is the way to go. Not anything else. That prarabdham, today I am having, whatever I have is prarabdham. Past is concerned, future is concerned, it's all Krishna's now. It's all in the memory, what I've got to do with it. So, so that is in the knowledge process, Jnana Margam. In the Bhakti Margam also, it is not different. Because, and all the past, what has happened is, with this knowledge, if we live in this world, all our past time, we have burned with the power of knowledge. This is knowledge. That and we have also burned the future also with the knowledge. Past and the future, which is in the memory, you have burned it with knowledge. Jnana Agni Sarva Karmanam Basma Sad Kurite Arjuna. Krishna says there. Jnana Agni, isn't it? How did I burn it? I burned it like this. Smriti, that means my memory. And Anumanam. Anumanam means conclusions from different things. I'm in my imaginations or things what I conclude about life. Anumanam means, say, based on the past experience in this world, sometimes we come to some conclusions, is it not? So that is the effect of this past on us now. You will. Why do you go back to past and analyze it? You start thinking, what did I do wrong? Or what did I do right that things went okay? So there is always a tendency in us to come to some anumanam, conclusions from that. So, but Shastram says, burn the whole thing, your past and the conclusions. And then bhavana. Bhavana is all about imagination about the future. Burn that as well. All these things, I have burned that with knowledge. With knowledge. Then what is left? All is left behind is this awareness. Bodham. Pradibodha viditam. Upanishad says. Pradibodha viditam means pradividam. Upanishad says that pradibodha viditam. Every moment, all the time present is this bodham. Awareness. And this avodha means this awareness, and that is what is mentioned in the Bhagavadam in different terms. Prajna, sometimes it's called, is this avodha. It's called prajna, or chinmatram, or chit. In different ways you will see, referring to only the one same thing. So, if you ask the question, if it is like that, how will I live my life, what will happen? That's always the question, isn't it? Will everything go smoothly the way I want it? This, we are always going back to our material existence in this world. And you'll ask this question. Suppose you, whatever you are saying this, if I take all this seriously, how will I carry on in this world? You will ask that question. It's naturally it will happen there. So, the answer from the Rishi says, if you have properly settled in that state of aham, asmi, awareness, if you are properly established there, everything will go very well. Because every moment when you need whatever knowledge is required, that knowledge will come from inside, from the Antaryami. Because once you have come to that state of awareness and established in that state, the Antaryami inside will release the proper knowledge what's necessary for every moment in your existence. Because you are not anymore in the bodily level. You are always in the state of that awareness, isn't it? And you won't need any reference book or anything at that time. So every moment, whatever knowledge is required, that knowledge will come from the Antaryami, and it is come from that, and as soon as the purpose is served, the knowledge will relieve you also. That is how that state will be. That state will be. And in the Upanishad, how does it say? Yes, sarvajnaha, sarvavit, yasya jnanamayam tamaha, divya brahmapure, esha vyomni, alma pratishtidaha. Upanishad says this. A person who is in that state, it's more or less is a Brahman realized state this is. Wherever he is, ya sarvajnaha. That is why it's called at that time. He is sarvajnan at that time. You may think that if you become self-realized, you won't have any knowledge of this world. That is wrong. You have more knowledge of the world than what you have today. That is why Upanishad says, in the realized state, who is running the show? Antaryami is running the show. And that Antaryami's nature is what Upanishad is pointing out. Yes, sarvajnaha, he knows everything. And sarvavit, there is nothing you can take away from him. Yasya jnanamayam tabaha, the knowledge is burning inside in him. Divye brahmapure esha vyomni alma pratishtidaha. Because you are not living anymore in this world, you are living in that world, brahmapure vyomni pratishtidaha. You are established there. Hridayakasham, in that sky, spiritual sky, brahmapuram alma, sarva jnanavit, jnanavit, sarveshuraha, and he will reveal to you everything what you need to know to live in these conditions, in this world. It's something difficult to understand today, that because we have never had that experience from inside, isn't it? So therefore we don't trust when Upanishad says that. This is the reason why I'm saying that when we study Upanishads, if you do not have that proper purity inside, we don't want to study Upanishad. Therefore, Bhagavadam was all written, Puranams were written. In the Shastram, Rishis, when they realized it, they spoke everything in a few words. That was enough. And they said, if you also realize it, you will see this is all true. But because ordinary people find it difficult to accept all this, that there is somebody inside, that itself is difficult for them to accept that. Antaryami, isn't it? All the scientists are debating, is there a thing called Antaryami? Inside. And these are the people who are going to accept Upanishads, you think. How can they accept that? So, acceptance of Antaryami itself is difficult for ordinary people. Where is the question of accepting that Antaryami is going to supply you all the knowledge what you need? How are they going to accept that? So that's not going to happen. So this is why we are saying there, sarvajnaha, sarvavid, Mandukya Upanishad, Mundaka Upanishad, everywhere you will see the same words repeated again and again. Sarvajnaha, sarvavid, sarvam jnapti matra sarupena, avabhodayandi visheshena, abhi sarvani vishayan janati. Sarvani vishayan janati. What does that mean? It means that what that is necessary for you, that knowledge will come from inside. That's what it means. Sarvani vishayan janati. Because now we are collecting knowledge from this world. Do we need all this to live? No, we don't need. I don't need to know what President Obama is having breakfast for. What knowledge is going to help me? If I know what he is eating in the morning, it doesn't matter. Or any other businessman or politician, whatever it is. These kind of knowledge I have accumulated a lot inside me. And I'm thinking that, oh, you need the knowledge of the world. What they call as the general knowledge. All useless knowledge. And that's all comes and goes, comes and goes. So that what is necessary, to get the prarabdham through that body, that knowledge will come from inside. That's all. And that is why it says there that, so he is this Antaryami inside, whom we address as Nyapti. Remember this word, Nyapti? Pratnya, Nyapti. They all mean referring to the same thing. So, Nyapti, Tvam Nyapti Matram, that Nyapti. So, Nyapti is that role Antaryami plays when he wants to release the knowledge. He is called Nyapti. Tvam Nyapti Matram. In the Mujugunda prayers, you will see that word Nyapti. So, in this way, different words are used according to the function of the Antaryami. So, so Nyapti means that not only showing his this awareness inside Antaryami, but whatever that is necessary, something special has to happen in life, whatever that's necessary for that will come from inside. The what you have to remember is this Antaryami inside, there is the seed of that Ishwaratva. Ishwaratva means, Ishwara means what? Controller, isn't it? Controller. So, Ishwara sarvabhudanam hriddeshe arjuna tishtadi. If you try to understand that verse properly, you will know that in all living entities, Ishwara is present there in hrid. Hriddeshe arjuna tishtadi. And that once you say he is Ishwara, what does that mean? He has full knowledge of everything. He is not lacking anything. So, if he wants to release something, he can do that. So, when he said to him, Tvam Nyapti Matram, that Nyapti is also coming from him. So, in other words, the seed of all the knowledge is present in that Antaryami. Any knowledge what you need to finish your prarabdham in this world, that knowledge is present in the form of a seed in that Antaryami. That is what it is saying. That's what it is saying. So, all what we have to understand to recognize that Antaryami is inside and he is Ishwara. He is Ishwara. So, if we live in this world recognizing and accepting the presence of Antaryami inside without any pride, completely surrendered unto him and without involving too much of chitavrati and thought waves, and in that way, if you have to do some vyavaharam in this world, and if you are doing that vyavaharam, whatever that is necessary at that point in time will be given to him directly from the heart by Ishwara or Antaryami. And it is not false knowledge. It is the real knowledge coming from the original source, which is Antaryami. That, of course, that needs faith, surrender. Two things. Faith in the Antaryami, surrender to the Antaryami. If those two things are there, Upanishads and the Rishis are telling us that you don't need to do anything. Everything what is required at every moment in time will come in the form of knowledge, because all the knowledge is present inside us. All the great people, if you look at great personalities, they lived on this understanding. They never prepared themselves in life for anything. It all happened to them. And at every moment in time, if you observe their life, you will see they were not planning for the future. Whatever that was happening, they lived in the present all the time. All the time, living in the present. Not thinking about the future, not worrying about it, not thinking about the past either. Always living in the present and passing through this world in that way. And whatever that was necessary for their living in this world at the time, it was provided by the Antaryami from inside, in whatever form it was necessary. So this you can understand from these verses. So we'll have a short break and then we'll continue.
Chedo darpanam arjanam vamaha davagni nirvapanam shreyakaidava chandriya vidaranam vidyavadu jivanam anandam budivardhanam pradipada purnamrita swadhanam sarvatma svanam varam vijayade shri krishna sankirtanam नामगारिबहुदा निजसर्वशक्ति तत्रार्पिदानि विदा स्मरणेन कालम् एतादृशी तव कृपा भगवन् ममावि दुर्दैवमीदृशमिहाजनिनानुरागाः तृणारवेषु नीचेन तरोरवी सहिष्णुना അമാനിനാമാനദേന കീർത്തനീയ സദാ ഹരി സുന്ദരീം കവിതാമാ ജഗദീശ കാമയേ മമ ജന്മനി ജന്മനീശ്വരേ ഭവദാത് ഭക്തിരഹേ ദുഗിത്വേ ആയി നന്ദനു ജിങ്കരാം പതിതാമാം ഷമേ ഭവാംബുദോ തവ പാദപങ്കജ സ്ഥിതദൂലി സദൃശം വിചിന്തയാം നയനം ജലദശ്രുധാരയ വദനം ഗദ്ഗദരുദ്ധയാ ഗിരാ പുലകേർനിജിതം കഥാവഭൂക്തവർണാമഗ്രഹണേ ഭവിഷ്യതി യുഗായിലം നിമേഷേണ ചക്ഷുഷാ പ്രാവിശായിലം ശൂന്യായിലം ജഗല് സർവം ഗോവിന്ദ ഗ്രഹേ നമേ ആശ്ലിഷ്യ വാ പാദരദാം ഗിനഷ്ടു മാം അദർശനാം മർമഹദാം കരോതു വാം യഥാതാവാദുലമ്മടോ മൽപ്രാണനാഥാസ്തുന ഏവനാപരാം
So Upanishad is saying that recognition of that Antaryami source inside and know very well that he is Ishvara there. Ishvara is present, and because Ishvara is present there, all the knowledge has to be there. And Ishvara will provide that knowledge at the time when it is required. And even if one has to engage in Vyavaharam, what is required for that moment, that much knowledge, what is necessary for that, will be released from the Antaryami. Antaryami will release that knowledge. So, and because that knowledge which is coming from the original source, it is always perfect. It's not something that comes from the mind. It's coming from the original source itself. Therefore, the knowledge is perfect. And there is no shortage of anything there. In the Antaryami, there is no shortage there. Then, tatra niradishayam, niradishayam sarvajnyatvam, niradishaya sarvajnyatva bijam, Upanishad says. All knowledge, the seed of all the knowledge is present there in that place. Niradishayam means, thing which you cannot even compare. To that extent, knowledge is present there. Sarvajnyatvam. Sarvajnyatvam means all-knowing, omniscience, conscience, omniscience all. That omniscience is present in there and it does not belong to the Ahangaram. It belongs to the Antaryami. It's not Ahangaram's omniscience. Ahangaram will never have omniscience. Antaryami's omniscience, that is. And that is why it's a little bit difficult to understand. Because when we say anything, oh, he's very good at it. Who is good at it? The Ahangaram is what we are pointing at. When we are talking about somebody, when we say, oh, he is very learned, he is very knowledgeable, and he is very clever. All these things when we say, whom are we referring to that he? It is his Ahangaram it is. When we glorify people in the world, say, we say a businessman, he is very astute, we say. Who is astute? His Ahankaram is astute. That's where his astuteness is. It's not in the Atma. So similarly, when knowledge, that Sarvajnyatvam means all-knowing capacity, know everything in full, that knowledge is not his. It is the knowledge of the Antaryami. Antaryami Sarvajnyatvam it is, not his Sarvajnyatvam. Jiva Ahankaram, which is, he doesn't have the Sarvajnyatvam. He doesn't know anything. So that is why it is a little bit difficult to understand, too subtle that is, to accept that. So, and because it is present there, Ishvara, whose Sarvajnyatvam is present there in the Antaryami, it will work when it is required. When it's required, it will work. Syad Isharatvam Sodaha Siddhyet Punarashtamad Animadi Aishwaryad. Upanishad says there, that Ishwaratvam means that nature of being Ishvara, controller of everything, that Sudaha Siddhyen, it is present there in everybody. All these Aishwarya Siddhis, everything present there. Punar Ashtamad Animadi Aishwarya, that includes the Ashta Aishwarya Siddhis as well. And if it is required, it can come out, if it is required. But for a jnani, normally, they don't need it. They don't need it, all these things. But this Isharatvam, Isharatvam means the controlling nature, isn't it? Ishara means controller. All controlling nature, powerful nature. That is sometimes a problem, because jnani doesn't require that. He doesn't want to control anything in this world. And for jnani enjoys his state of realizations. That's what he enjoys. He's established in that state, and he is happy in that state to remain in that state. Because Ishwaratvam comes into action when there is creation, maintenance, dissolution. Srishti Sthiti Samharam. Jnani has no interest in Srishti Sthiti Samharam. That is why if you talk to a jnani about creation, maintenance and dissolution, he will show no interest in that. A proper jnani. He won't have any interest in that. Because for as far as he is concerned, what exists is only Shanti. Inside that, Shanti, that's what he is concerned about. He's not bothered whether the world was created or whether somebody is maintaining this world or the world is going to be destroyed one day. As far as he is concerned, the world doesn't exist. That's a very higher degree of, higher state of realization. It comes from a completely different angle. So that is why when Mithila was burning, Ashtavakra Maharshi is talking to Janaka. In the Ashtavakra Gita you will find there. So he is saying, Janaka is saying, what's burning? Where is Mithila burning? He is saying, as far as I am concerned, nothing is burning. Mithila doesn't exist. This is his answer. The king is saying this. So it's not saying from Ajnanam, it is something from full realization he is talking about that. So, so, as far as jnani is concerned, world has no reality. Whether it is created or not, it doesn't mean anything to him. Whether it is maintained or not, it doesn't mean anything to him. Whether it is going to be dissolved one day, it doesn't mean anything to him. Because he is remaining in that state of self, of the Atma, state of the Atma, Antaryami's position. So, so he is enjoying that happiness that comes from the Shanti, or Sukham, or Nirvana Sukham, that comes from the Atma, from realization of the Self. So, and that happiness is his own. That happiness is his own. And there he has taken out all kinds of ego, ahankaram from inside, and he is able to remain in this world without being in contact with any upadhis here. Upadhi means body, mind, intelligence, ego. And he has freed himself from that, and he is not rare to fight with anybody or quarrel with anyone, and he has no hate towards anybody, he has no attachment anywhere, and to everybody he has a friendly disposition. Maitri bhava. So, so when this is why you will see in the Bhagavatam mentions that when somebody is self-realized and established in the self, they are like children. They are like children. Why do they say like that? Because if you are completely free from the upadhis and free from the grip of society, family, friendship and everything, then it will be like children playing when they are children, how they play. When they play, you will see they are very serious about the games when they play, isn't it? They take it very seriously. And if one loses in football or whatever it is, say young boy is 8 years, 10 years old, when they are playing football, if somebody loses, there will be a fight sometimes. And that is what is you are making that in a bigger level in the huge stadiums. That's in one way if you look at it, is it not? Nothing more than that. Children also, when they fight each other, they'll play and they lose party who has lost it. They'll fight against the party who has won. They'll say you have fouled and you have done dirty tricks. And then it will turn to physical at the end, abusing each other. All these kind of things happen when children play each other. The same thing happens in a much larger scale in the Emirates and Old Trafford and everywhere. That what happens in a bigger level, that's all. But the important thing is that sometimes when children are playing, elderly members also will go and play with them. If they are short of people to finish the game, to help them, elder members also will play them. But elderly members, they are not concerned who wins or who loses. Children are very concerned. They are very serious about it. That's why. So, sometimes for the sake of the children, the elders will let them win. These are all in the game. Parents sometimes when they play with the children, isn't it? So, similarly, if inside that fulfillment has come, then once that fulfillment has come inside, and the yami realization has happened inside, then nothing is serious in the world outside anymore. Nothing is serious anymore in the world outside. Now we are taking everything so seriously, thinking that this is the beginning, this is the end of everything, and in that way we take it so much attention to that. So similar, therefore, here success, failure, profit, loss, and praise, insult, and glorifications, all these things will go once inside and the yami realization happens. You can't take anything in the world anymore seriously after that. That's why there will not, because Antaryami is controlling the life to that extent, not controlled by vasanas anymore. At the moment vasanas are controlling us, is it not? But once vasanas have gone away and there is no chittam anymore, it's only chitshakti present there, mind is not operating, everything is performed by Antaryami as and one is required, just to rid off the prarabdham from the body, then in that situation, he is saying here that he will not take seriously anything that's happening in the world. Therefore, there is no ragam, no dvesham, no attachment or aversion. And he also, at that moment, when Antaryami is dictating everything, he is not desiring for happiness either. Oh, I must have all these things, things should happen in this way so that I can be happy. And he is also not hating distress when it comes. Because happiness and distress will come when you have vyavaharam. Something you will win, something you will lose, isn't it? As they say, you win some, you lose some. So, that will go on. But that's not going to change. But what will happen is, even though you may win some, you may lose some, the effect is not there. Happiness and distress, because when you win, you are happy. When you lose, you are unhappy. That will go away. That effect of that winning and losing on us is gone away from that. If any distress comes in life, they will say, yes, let it come, so what? That's their attitude. So many people are getting so many kinds of distress in this world, isn't it? So if you start worrying about all that, if it comes like that, let it come. Let it come, that's their attitude. Let it come. Whatever that has to, if you are prepared for the worst, then you won't get hurt. If you are prepared, always to remain prepared for the worst to happen. In the Uttara Rama Charitam, Sri Ramachandra mentions this. He says, after all, I am Rama. He says, let all distress come to me. Ramosmi sarvam sahet, he says. I'll tolerate all the distress in this world. Why? Because I am born as Rama, he says. I'll tolerate everything, he says. So, problem comes, that when distress comes, we are saying, oh, this should not have happened to me. We are insisting on that. We want to control the situation and want to make sure that it should happen the way I want it to happen. That is where all the problem comes. All the problem comes. And when it happens like that, it is called a distress. Suppose something happens in life, and if I am not agreeing with it, it should not happen in this way, then it causes distress. But instead, if you say, so what, let it happen, it has happened, now what can be done? If you go along in that way, that's what Ramachandra did. Let all the distress come to me, I'm not bothered, because there was knowledge in there, in Ramachandra. So he was not bothered about that. So, suppose something that has happened, if it is what you like, then you can't call it as dukkham, you call it as sukham. If something has happened and which you didn't like it, then you call it as dukkham. That's all it is. Say something has happened in life, and then you will say, or if you like it, then you will say it's sukham. If you didn't like it, dislike it, then you will say it is dukkham, in distress. Isn't it? in the Yoga Vasishtam, in the form of Dukkham, there is a whole chapter. Deva Puja Upanyasam, it is called. They are saying that you can experience Atma in the form of distress. In the form of distress. These are spoken by Jnanis. Jnanis are saying this. That Swarnam or gold, you can turn that into bangles, earrings, and eardrops or whatever that is, and then rings and jewelry in so many forms, isn't it? And those who know that it is all gold, who is seeing it as gold, he is not too bothered whichever way it comes. He knows it's all gold at the end. Similarly, those who have known the truth, he is willing to experience that soul even in the form of distress. That is also Atma. When distress is happening also, he is saying, Atma also you can experience in the form of happiness and distress here. Happiness and distress. Because actually nothing exists except Atma. That is the truth, isn't it? And similarly, when you are in the youth or in the old age, nobody wants to get old. Everybody wants to remain in the youth stage, isn't it? Yavanam Vardhakyam. So both in the form of Yavanam, youthfulness, and in the form of old age, you can experience Atma. You can experience Atma. You can experience Atma in the form of happiness and distress. You can experience Atma in the form of youth and the old age. And you can also experience Atma in the form of Samyoga Viyogam. Samyoga Viyogam means that in our life, certain people have come and joined us in life. In the name of wife, children, parents, and other family members. That is Samyogam. You can, in the form of Atma, you can enjoy them. Experience them. When they all leave us, one after the other, Viyogam. When Viyogam happens, you can experience that also in the form of Atma. Atma's authority is what is spoken there. What does Atma mean? To understand in this way. Then, so, Atma, when the war is going on in the battlefield, you can experience Atma in that battle. You can also experience if there's a festival going on there somewhere, that festival is also Atma. Everywhere, what you are actually experiencing is Atma. Atma is what you are experiencing. Because, who is experiencing everything? In the form of Atma, you are experiencing different experiences. Just like in the screen, the cinema is coming. And the cinema, sometimes it's a tragedy or sometimes it's a comedy, isn't it? And sometimes there is a war or battlefield. So, similarly, that same truth, one truth that is existing, you are experiencing it in different forms. These are all experiences. Which one? This cinema, this tragedy, comedy. Similarly, all the adhi, diseases and the mental illnesses, all other problems, sarvobhadrava shatruna adhi vyadhi ibhadravam, all these things, all kinds of distresses, all these things, the realized soul, he says, these are all activities of Atma. Atma's activities, and he offers them as a flower or offering to Atma. All these experiences, he offers them to Atma as a flower. That means, when distress is coming, various distress is coming, the realized soul is saying that these problems are coming, I offer that to Atma because it's coming from him. Like a surrendered devotee offer to Krishna. Krishna is giving me to it. There's a little difference between Jnani and the Bhakta. Jnani says offering to Atma, devotee says offer it to Krishna. Whether distress comes or happiness comes, no complaint. That's the main thing. Whether it's a jnani or a bhakta, that is what the symptom of a spiritually grown person. He is not complaining, he is accepting it, everything that is thrown at him. We may call it happiness and distress, but as far as he is concerned, it's an offering to Krishna. If it is maximum misery has come, hand it over to Krishna, whatever form it is. But then you have to have that frame of mind inside. Like that. So, he is never saying, this should not happen to me. We will always say, this should not have happened to me, they say. People say like that, isn't it? This should not have happened to me. So, because thinking about it, reflecting about it, both Jnani and the Bhakta, both of them have to analyze things. Without that, it won't happen. Bhakta also has to analyze. Only thing is, his shelter is Krishna. He is offering everything to Krishna. You are giving it, here it is. You can have it in that way. That is the Bhakta's way of offering. Jnani's offering is offering it to the Alma. Alma is doing all these things in my life. Let it carry on. That's the way he is doing it. So in this way, by thoughtful process, all the problems inside, he is taking it out. He is plucking it and taking it out from inside. And that is what the Bhikshu has spoken. He is saying here, little by little, thinking about it, and I have taken out everything and thrown it away. Now, even if you want to give me distress, you can't. I cannot take it. It will not happen to me. And even if you try to give me distress and try to give me problems, nothing will happen to me. And anyone and everyone can do whatever they want, nothing will happen. Because why? Why does he say that? Because they are also me. That realization. When he realized that I am the one who is present in them also. You remember that verses? Dukkasya hedur 52. Dukkasya hedur yadi devatastu kimalpmanastatra vikarayostal yadangamangena nihanyade kujil krudhyeda kasmai purushasya dehe. Alma yadi syal sukha dukha hedu kimanyadastatra nijasvabhava nah alpanonyad yadi danmrushasyal krudhyeda kasmal na sukham na dukham. That is that verse 53. That is what the purport of that verse is. Alma yadi syal sukha dukha hedu sukha dukha hedu alma yadi syal kimanyadastatra nijasvabhava Nahyalmanonyan yaditan mrishasyal krudhyeda kasmal na sukham na dukham. Sukham dukham is all when you have no identification with Alma. That is where I am enjoying, experiencing. But if Alma itself is doing this, sukham dukham, pass it back to him. Then why should I suffer? After all, I am the one who is present in everyone. I can't hurt myself. So, it has no reality. That's what he is pointing out. That Nahyalpa no onyadyadi tan mrsha. Mrsha means false. It's all false. Mrshasyal. Krudhyeda kasmel kasman na sukham da dukham. Why should I get upset about it? That is his realization. So, and he gave the example that if the teeth bites the tongue, can you blame the teeth? Kathamaya kupyad. Whom will I get upset with? Whom will I hate? There is nobody to hate here. In this world, there is nobody to hate here. If you look in the 10th canto, there is in the 23rd chapter, when the Yajnavakni, wives of the Brahmanas, when Krishna blessed them with bhakti and sent them home, at the finally verses, last verse, he says that iti swagham anusmritya krishne ede kradahelana didrikshavopyachirayo kamsal bita nacha chalan iti swagham anusmritya krishne ede kradahelana didrikshavopyachunayo kamsal bita nacha chalan. Sometimes, suppose if I feel scratching on one leg, I will use the other leg to scratch, to rub it. Instead of going, I'll save some work with the other leg. Similarly, you will see in the hot weather when you walk in India, particularly where you have to walk in the heat all the time, there will be a lot of dust and everything. So when you come home, they will expect you to wash the feet before you get inside the house. So if there's water outside, and we notice how they wash the feet, they won't wash with the hand everything. Feet, they will wash one feet with the other feet. You've not seen that, have you? Yeah. They'll pour the water and wash the feet with the other feet. Rub it each other. So we know because both are dusty equally. So use one to another. Hand is not utilized at that time. So similarly, similarly, you can see that if in that process while washing, suppose your nails were long in one leg, it may scratch on the other leg in the process of washing, and you got hurt. So because it got hurt, you can't tell this leg, why did you do that to the other leg? You can't say that, can you? Here, that's no problem because we are covered in socks and shoes and boots and everything, one on top of the other. So the body is not having such problems. You don't have to rub. So it's a different situation. So, angam angena nihanyade chet pratyaksha udaharanam, it says, direct experiences. So, you can't get angry with the leg because it's caught, scratched the other leg. That is what he's saying here. Krudyeda kasmen kudamaya kupyek. In the same way, like this. Jikvam kojil sandashati sodadbi tadvedanayam katamaya kupyel. What's the point in getting angry with the teeth for biting the tongue? Some nice prasadam came, and out of lust, you took it and straight away ate it. So whom should we blame? We have to blame ourselves. In that lusty mood, you wanted to eat it as best, enjoy the prasadam. And in that process, the tongue got bitten. Whom to blame? That's what he's saying. Jihvam kojil sandashadi sodadbi tadvedanayam kadamaya kupyel. So, atma yadi syal sugadukha hedu. That 53rd verse. Alma yadi syal sugadukha hedu. Kimanyadas tatranijas sabhavam. Nahi almanonyan yadidan masha syal. Krudhyedakasmal na sukham na dukham. Proper analysis inside about sukham dukham. What is sukham and what is dukham? He's saying here. So, some people say that they say sukham or happiness, you don't have to, we are nearly not happy. But distress is always there in life. Some people say like that. You see, no. They say there's only distress in life, there is no happiness in life. So they say, one poet has written this. Poets write all sorts of things, from their imagination they are writing, isn't it? They say, enlightenment is distress. Ignorance is happiness. Ignorance is happiness. Enlightenment is distress. They are saying like that. And dukham, sukham, another poet is saying, distress is happiness. There are different kinds of poets, you know, in this world who writes poetry. And they every year, these poets produce something new. It has to be new always. And there is a group of these great poets sitting there analyzing all these things. And what they have found out something. Some of these poetries are very funny when you read them. So, Maranam prakritihi sharidanam vigriti jivita mucchade. There are very, very verses about the body, about death. Poets take up all these subjects to write. Death, body, and life, all these kind of things. So, you will see one thing there. When they are talking about all these things, they also sometimes speak certain things which are very interesting to notice. Because sometimes poets are thoughtful people. Many of them are thoughtful people. So when they write, there will be a slight hint of some spiritual understanding also will come in that. Similarly, this Tarkashastram. Tarkashastram means, you know that there is a one of the Upangam of the Vedam. Upangam means, we have the main Vedam, Samam, Yajasa, Yajasa, Rikha, and Rikha, Yajasa, Samam, Atharva, the four Vedas. Apart from that, there is Upavedam there. And Upavedam, there is, apart from, you have also got the six Shastram associated with that. four Vedam and six Shastram. And out of the six Shastram, one of this is Tarkam. Tarkam means through argument establishing the truth. Through arguing, establishing the truth through arguments. Navadvipa was well known for that. Navadvipa was well known. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught Tarkam and Nyayam in the school. When Mahaprabhu was teaching, he taught Tarkam and Nyayam. There's a lot of interesting things in this Tarkam also. How they come to different conclusions. They have their own way of looking at things. It's all Tarkam, it is logic. And there is Tarkam, Kutarkam, Vitarkam, all sorts of branches of that, from that Tarkam. Anyway, that's not of importance to us. What's important here is that in this Tarkam, the way they argue things is very interesting. How they see the truth. For example, there is an earthen pot existing. And if there is no earthen pot, they won't say there is no earthen pot there. They'll say there is an absence of the earthen pot. This is the Tarkam. There's a reason why they say like that. You have to go in their way to study these things. So, if the pot is taken away from there, they will say there is absence of the pot. This is how their terminology goes. They won't say there is no pot there. There is an absence of the pot. So, they call it in the Shastra, they say, Gada Abhavam. Gada Abhavam, they say here. So, in this way, they will keep thinking about it. And they will say, when the pot is, Gadam is there, there is Gada Abhavam also there. They say two things are existing at the same time. Because this existence and non-existence in their views is little different. Gadam is there and Gada Abhavam also is present there. But when Gadam you can't see, Gadam means pot, earthen pot. When Gadam you can't see, what they will say is, Gada Abhavam you can't see now. That's how they put it. Make it more complicated in that way. When Gadam you can't see, what they are saying is, we will say, oh, the pot is not there, finished, isn't it? What they will say is, that Gada Abhavam you can't see. Absence of the pot you can't see now. That's how they put it. So, when we talk all these things, you will find it very funny, isn't it? All this, why they are talking like this. But it's a very serious thing. Do you know why? Because what they are saying is, that this Gada Abhavam, absence of this ghatam or pot is mithya, is a false thing. And the ghatam or pot itself is also some thought wave it is. It's only a thought wave. That form is creating a thought in your mind of an existence of something. That's all it is. There's no more reality to that. So, because the form has come there, the absence of that form you are not able to know. Do you know what I'm saying? Because that form has come there, the absence of that form, you are not able to perceive within yourself. Therefore, in the same way, what they are saying is, if you look into your own body, that is where it is leading to. How to understand this body. That if you think about this body, and if you keep asking this question, the person who was teaching this Tarkam, he says, it is nothing but a Vedantic principles. What it means is, that when this body is there, at the moment we say the body is there, isn't it? But at the same time, the absence of the body is also there in us. Do you understand? That the body is there, we are saying now. But in reality, in us, the absence of the body is also there. Only thing is, it's covered with avidya. That's all it is. But Atma situation is like that. This example is for that purpose. That it is subtle, it is too subtle. But unless you know this, that today I am saying I got this body. It is only a perception I have created within me. In my real self, body is not existing. So on the one side, I am saying body is there. On the other side, I am saying the absence of the body is also there. Absence of the body is also there. So, while the body is existing, I am saying the absence of the body is also existing in me. In me. So, but because I am, only problem is, I am seeing this body with my eyes. That's all. Therefore, the absence of this body, I am not able to accept as permanent. Think all these things when you get time, why they are saying these things. See, somehow or the other we got absorbed in the body. And because we are seeing it every day, and we are thinking that it's there, it's there. What Krishna is saying, that this body's existence itself is, when we come to the next chapter, that is the main discussion, that body is not real. That is a discussion, the 28th chapter. The next few days, we'll finish this today. So, you will notice there, Krishna is trying to establish this understanding into our thought. Our way of thinking has to change. Today we are thinking that body, 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 everything based on the body, all the conclusions based on the body. And unfortunately, because of that, we can't even dream of the existence of the soul within us, isn't it? None, awareness is not at all happening to us in spite of reading books. It all looks like a story from the Harry Potter story. It looks like some story somebody has written. And we feel like that about Bhagavatam. We are feeling about Bhagavatam in the same way. We are thinking all this is all real. What Bhikshu has experienced, Jadaprada has experienced, we think we have doubts over it. Why? The reason is that we are seeing only the body, nothing but the body. So therefore, because we are seeing this body and we are seeing others in the body, this absence of the body, we are thinking, we are not able to accept it as a permanent thing. Absence of the body. That is the biggest problem we have today. Because we are only seeing the body. You see how senses have cheated us. The senses have taken control of us to that extent that we can't even accept that we could exist in the absence of this body. That's the point Krishna is making there. Alma yadi syal sukha dukha hetu kim anyadastra nijasvabhavam. Nijasvabhavam means what? False. False. It is false, Bhikshu is saying. Kim anyadastra nijasvabhavam. Everything is nijasvabhavam. Na hi atmano anyad yadi tan mrusha syal krudheda kasmal na sukham na dukham. Only these realizations will only happen when we become more and more subtle. When we become more and more subtle, only then this will come in our realization. In our present gross state, it is not possible. It's not possible to happen. That is what it is mentioned here. So, deham has got a beginning, is it not? Body has a beginning. And it has got an end as well. It has got an end as well. Therefore they say, Adau andejayam nasti vartamanevi tal tada. Gaudapada Kariya. Gaudapada Acharya says in the Gaudapada Kariya, in the Mandukya Upanishad Kariya, he says there, that this is why Vedantam's position, if you properly understand it, you cannot trust or accept anything what the modern science is telling. We can't do it. Because it is so convincing. Only thing is, you got to learn to think in that way, rather than in the way we are conditioned by. He says, Gaudapada Acharya says there, who is Gaudapada Acharya? Gaudapada Acharya is a direct disciple of Sukadeva Goswami. And his disciple was Govinda Bhagavad Pada, whose disciple is Shankaracharya, in that way. Adau andejayam nasti vartamanevi tathada. He says, what was not there before, and what is not going to be there afterwards, he does not exist even now. Even though you are feeling that it exists now, in reality it has no existence. Which is logical. What was not there before, and what is not going to be there afterwards, even though it appears to you as though it exists now, in reality it has no existence. That is the point to support this verse. This verse. Almadiyasyal sugadukkahe. These verses are nothing but Upanishad verses. Realizations of the rishis, Bhikshu is speaking in, and that is what impressed Krishna. That's what impressed Krishna. That's why he brought it up here. Bhikshu is saying this, what the rishis have spoken. So he's saying here that Almadiyasyal sugadukha hedu kimanyadastatra nijasvabhavam nahi almanonyanyadi tanmrushasyal krudhyeda kasmal na sukham na dukham. What sukham, what dukham? What does it mean when you are in that state? That's what he's saying. So, if you look at it in this way, the body was not there before. Before it wasn't there. It is there now. Because you are seeing it with the eyes. And after some time, it won't be there either. So, even though it is there now, it is not acceptable as an authority. In the Shastram they call it as Pramana Janyam. It is not a Pramana. Pramana means authority, isn't it? What do they say in English? It is the authentic. It's not authentic. Body is not authentic. Authentic means that we can't accept its reality. It's not real. It's not authentic. That's how Vedantam says about the body. So, so in their point of view, if you really look at this body, it is nothing but an optical illusion it is. In the scientific language, if you say. You know what that optical illusion means? Illusion means, if you look at it this way, that awareness inside, I am, that aham, 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 that has nothing to do with this body. Awareness. Or bodham inside, nothing to do with this body. And that is inside us, all of us, in our hrithsthanam or in the heart, it is staying on its own, unaffected by this body. Completely detached from the body. And the more you get closer to that, you will start realizing, the more and more you are realizing that, the presence of Antaryami inside and his existence, you will see that this awareness of the body is going away from you. And that is the proof of that. When self-realization happens, you will start realizing the body is not real. Body is not real. But today if somebody tells me that the body is not real, how can you say that, you will say? I would ask that question. It's real, I can see it's existing, and you are telling me it's not real? No. Vedantam does not accept that. Vedantam is saying that even though it appears to you as though it's real, in reality it's not real. For Vedantis, what is real is this Antaryami and that Bodham awareness inside. That is real, body is not real. For us, body is real, that other one is not real. Antaryami is not real. This is the differences. So, and that is where, that when our Shraddha changes from this body into Antaryami, then, and once you have touched Antaryami, then you will know that this thing called body, the mind, the intelligence, the ego, the senses, these are all bubbles that has happened in that pure consciousness called Bodham. They are nothing but bubbles. In the form of bubbles it has come. Body has come, mind has come, body has come, intelligence has come, ego has come, senses have come, and the world has come finally. So, and that state is called Nirvikalpa Samadhi or Prajna, Jnanam. And more, if one gets absorbed in that awareness, aham, and he goes deeper and deeper into it, then when he goes there, he finds that this thing called ahankaram or false ego is not existing anywhere, is false. It doesn't have any existence. What is present there is pure prajna or bodham or chidagasham. That is what is existing there. So, so shuddha bhavata svabhavaha. The only thing what you have in real experience is shuddha bodha svabhava. Pure awareness in the form of consciousness. That is what it you are. That's what we are, all of us. Not this body experience. Body experience. So, and that is because of the presence of that pure bodham consciousness inside. Because of its presence only, we are feeling that the body is existing. Mind is existing. Intelligence is existing. And once you have known that experience of the awareness of the Antaryami, then there is no sukham, there is no dukham. Bhikshu is saying, if distress is the nature of Atma, then you will never be able to get rid of distress. You see that? If distress is the nature of Atma, please don't do anything to get rid of distress. It is not going to go. If distress is the nature of the Atma. Just like when you get headache, what do? We take medicines and then it goes, isn't it? So, if headache is permanent, then medicine is not going to work. Headache is permanent, then medicine is not going to work. So, and if headache is permanent in us, constantly or permanently if we have headache, then by some reason if you didn't get headache, you'll go to the doctor and say to him, I don't have headache. You'll complain about it, wouldn't you? If permanently, if you have the headache. But because it is not permanent, it comes, you feel that it can be got rid of by taking medicine. So you take medicines and getting rid of it. Similarly, so therefore, headache is not real. Because it is no permanent existence. It's not real. Therefore, it goes away. And if it is permanent, then it's not going to go away. And you will see that you need that headache to feel that you feel genuine. So, everything Swabhavam Prakriti is like that. It's not permanent. Our Swabhavam Prakriti is not permanent. Dukkham, distress is Prakriti. And if you talk about it, it is not going to go. It is not going to go. You will leave that in the 23rd chapter, in the 10th canto. That verse, what we were talking about it. Yeah. Iti swaghamanas kritya krishna dekadahe lena didrakshau apyachadayo kamsal bidana chachalan. Because of frightened of Kamsa, the husband of the brahmanas, or the brahmana women, they realized that, the husbands, they did not say anything or do anything about it when this incident happened. When Krishna came and asked for the prasadam, they did not go. They prevented their women, brahmana women, going and delivering the prasadam to them. So here also, Krishna is saying, Bhikshu is also saying, that in that 53rd verse, that Atma yadisya sukha dukha hedu. If Atma is responsible for sukham and dukham, kima nyadastatra nijasubhavam, that there is, that means, if distress is a nature of the Atma, then even if you do anything, you can't get rid of it. By talking about it, it's not going to go about distress. If it is a part of the Atma, if it's a part of the soul, na hi Atma neusyal yaditan mrishasyal krudyada kasmalna sukham dukham. Anything that you have accepted outside, separated from the Atma, everything that is mrisha. Mrisha means it's only false, which you are thinking it exists. It's not real. That's what mrisha means. For example, the body, mind, intelligence, ego, senses, the world, everything is, we are thinking it is separated from Atma. And because we are thinking it is separated from Atma, it is mrisha. It is false. That means, you can see here, you are seeing something in the Jagrat, vacant state. And then it disappears. In Swapnam, in Jagrat you are seeing something, but when you went into the dream state, it has disappeared, gone. And then in the dream state, you are experiencing something, seeing something. And then when you go to deep sleep, it has disappeared. It has disappeared. So, and then deep sleep has come. Deep sleep has come. But there is something there, you don't know what it is. And other things have come and gone. But in the deep sleep, nothing has come, nothing has gone. Only you are feeling the bliss. Is it not? See the difference between deep sleep and the other two. In waking state, you are seeing something is coming in your perception. Some world, buildings and vehicles and so many other people and everything. They have come in the waking state and then they all disappear when you go into dream state. World doesn't exist anymore. Then you are in another world. And in the other world, you have created a lot of dreams and various things you are experiencing in the dream state. And the dream state is lasted for some time and everything that was in the dream state, as soon as you moved into the deep sleep state, they've all gone. And in the deep sleep state, nothing came and nothing left. All you had was experience. Whereas in the other two states, coming and going was happening. Deep sleep, it didn't happen that way. So you can see in life also, sometimes we will get a lot of distress. So heavy distress can come in life. So when that distress comes, we'll say to Krishna, will a time come when this will go, when I'll be freed from this distress? And after some time, what do you see? That is gone, and then some happiness has come from somewhere. In the vacant state, all this is happening. Sometimes if you observe these old ladies, or old men sometimes, it's interesting. Not in a critical way, but just see their life. What happens is, husband and wife were living together very closely for many, many years, attached to each other, as they say. And then they were celebrated their 50 years of marriage and 60 years of marriage and all that. All kinds of things are done. And suddenly one gone. Something happened, death comes. It doesn't think whether it's husband or wife, or there's no consideration like that. So one of them has gone. And if you see the other partner who was there in such a heavy distress. In Lachmurhit you can see this more because there's a lot of old people there. See, constantly this is the same story repeating all the time. So one husband died, and then the wife is feeling so much in distress. And Christmas comes, or this year we have no Christmas, they say, because husband died, and life has become very boring and very monotonous, and there's nothing in life to look forward to. We were so attached to each other, we loved each other so much. When you meet them, they'll tell you all this. The old ladies, they'll tell you all these things. They want somebody to listen to it. So, tell you all these things. And you listen to all that. So this happened 2 or 3 years ago. At that time they said there is no Christmas. So I thought it's going to be like this for the rest of the life. No. 2 years gone, the whole house is now decorated nicely with all the lamps and Christmas tree and flowers and whatnot, everything. So much present, they are so busy, grandchildren are coming, children are coming, big celebration going at the home. They are thinking, 2 years ago, when I came this way, what was going on? And that person is sitting there, and probably she had eaten well, drunk well, and in a very ecstatic mood, enjoying their life to the maximum what they can have it. So what does it mean? That is what Bhikshu is also saying, the same thing. The lady is showing to us by example. That's the only difference. Bhikshu is saying that kimanyadastatra nijasvabhavam nahi atmanonyanyadi tan mrushasyal krudhyadagasmalna sukhamna dukham. You can see this. You can't hold on to that. Happiness or distress. It's not permanent. It has come, it's gone. Everything in life is like that. It cannot stay permanently. And after, now when I speak to this person, she is telling me, well, yeah, when he was there, it was nice time we had together. But now she has got new friends, and there's a different life altogether. Everything changed in life. And finding some happiness from this life again, it's coming back. But Bhikshu is saying, be careful. Don't get trapped into all these things. That's higher knowledge, Bhikshu's side. So, important point is that these things, what is happening, that is like a cinema, isn't it? In cinema, what happens in the cinema theater? In the screen, so many things are happening. Good is coming, bad is coming, all these times. And in the morning, you are very happy. And by midday, lunchtime, you are very angry. And by evening, your mood is off and you are gone to sleep. So, like these emotions are coming and going here. Where is all this happening? That is what Bhikshu is asking. And we are only seeing the emotions. We are not seeing that the witness who is witnessing all these emotions. And that is what Krishna is asking us to look at. To look at the emotions where all these things are happening. Where all these things are happening. There is a verse which is also in the Viveka Chudamani, which is taken based on the same concept, what is spoken in this verse. It is the 295 verse in the Viveka Chudamani. If you look, you will see the same concept for the spoken about person who is
Vigarinam sarva vigara veda nitya vigaro bhavidam samarhati manoradastvan and sushuptishus putam puna punar drishtam asatyame tayoho.
He says here, Vigarinam sarva vigara veda nitya vigaro bhavidam samarhati manoradastvan anusushuptishuspudam sushuptishuspudam puna punar dushtam puna punar drishtam asattvam edayoho.
That the witness of all these things, vigaram, different emotions that's coming to us, the witness of all that, he is a vigari. He has no vigaram. Vigaram is for ahangaram or the mind. It is not in the witness. Witness is not experiencing anything. But if that witness is not there, this vigaram cannot be there. This is the beauty. When vigaram is happening, it does not affect him, witness. But if the witness is not there, vigaram is not there. So, chit jyoti, and as long as it is like that, this setup, if we understand, that witness is there, at that time vigaram will be there, and vigaram will come, and vigaram will go. This coming-going business will carry on as long as this witness is there. If the witness has gone away, then this coming-going business will also come to a stop. That is what Bhikshu is saying here. And knowing like this, I have come to realize the truth, and everything else is mrsha. He says the word mrsha. Na hi alpano yad yadidan mrsha syal. Everything which is not alpa is all mrsha, he says. Na hi alpano anyad yadidan mrsha syal. Everything outside Alma is mrsha, is false, he's saying there. They give the example that just like you see the mirage in the desert, or so many things we will think in our mind. Actually, whatever we think in our mind, what solution is there in the problem? There's no solution for those problems, isn't it? Because only solution is to know that it's not real. Otherwise, if you try to solve all the problems that comes into the mind, you won't be able to solve it. Because those problems are too many, and the problems are connected with too many people as well. But important thing is, the solution to the problem is that to know that they are not real. Just like last night I saw some dreams, but I don't take them into account now. That's gone with that, because I know it's not real. Similarly, at this moment in time also, so many thoughts are coming to my mind. What can I do? It's coming. But final resolution is this. Prakriti is there, and that is my prakriti. That I'm getting so many thought waves, so many emotions in me. Don't try to change it. It will come and go. If the anger is coming, let it come. What can I do? And similarly, so many thought waves are coming. Let them come. What can be done? Desires have come. What can be done? Just like advertisement comes in the TV, that's also come. Let it come and go. So if I don't give attention to that, if I don't give attention to the advertisement in the TV, why should I give attention to the thought waves that's coming in or emotions that's coming in? And that is what is called, Krishna calls it as Prakriti Purusha Vivechanam, separation between Prakriti and Purusha. Remember Sankhya, what we discussed before, that Sankhya Yogam is nothing but separating Prakriti and Purusha. This is all Prakriti, which one, thought waves coming, emotions coming, everything is Prakriti. Purusha is the Self. And separating Self from the Prakriti is called Prakriti Purushana Vivechana Yogam. And that is the process Krishna has accepted in the Bhagavad Gita as a process. He has accepted that. And what Krishna is saying there is, you don't have to even engage in meditation or anything. Simply give up. That's all what is necessary. That connection with the mind. Connection with the mind, if you give it up, everything will go. And if anger comes, let it come. But you don't get, you can get absorbed in that. You don't get absorbed in that. So, desho means anger is also another emotion. So, and when it happens, every time to inquire who is experiencing this anger, in that way, dissolve that anger at the place where it's born. That's a process. Jnanis use that process. Devotees, on the other hand, when anger comes also, that is also Krishna's
influence Krishna has to take care, and he becomes more and more surrendered to Krishna. That is what the devotee's process. When anger comes, he surrenders more to Krishna. When distress comes, he surrenders further to Krishna. So it becomes a surrendering process, continuously surrendering to Krishna, and that's bhakti. Constantly asking this question, who is experiencing it, and in that way freeing yourself from that, is jnanam. Is jnanam. And after a while, it will be sucked there by the hrida. So, pragasham, pravarti, moham, na dveshti, na nivrtani kankshati. So, karma has to be done. Yes, desire has karma has come. You have done that. Sleep has come. Yes, you have to sleep. Meditation has come. Yes, you have to meditate. So many things. But all the time, Bhikshu mentions there, he wants to remain aloof from everything. None of them can touch me. None of them can touch me. That means sattugunam comes, meditation comes, but not attached to it. Rajogunam comes, actions happened, not attached to it. Tamogunam comes, distress came, not attached to it. So, I remain all the time separated from that. Separated from that, he says. Sir. And the same thing, great devotees have also spoken. The astrologer is saying, now it is Saturn, then it will be Jupiter, and there will be some Mars, another planet. Let them all come one after the other, and let them do what they want to do, and let them go. Who cares? That is the devotee's approach. So, so when distress comes also, it's the same approach, like the Bhikshu did. He says that, lot of distress is coming, let them come and go, let them come and go. I'm not going to do anything about it. If distress is going to come, let it come, let distress come. Insult will come in this world, let them insult. People may honor you, you're accepting honor, isn't it? Similarly, accept the insult also, dishonor also. And everyone may insult you, let them insult. But when you are here, when somebody is praising you, you're hearing that. So similarly hear that also. So if, and that also becomes a kind of worship. That is the worship of the Jnanamargam. Jnanamargam, they worship like this. This is the worship. Continuously removing the ego from inside. Knowing that ego is experiencing everything, not the self. That worship, that is the worship of the Jnanamargam. And if this archana or puja, if that if that happens, you more or less slowly get freed from the grip of prakriti. So, and as long as you are insisting it should be like this, it should be like that, if you are insisting on that, that means you have become more and more in the grip of prakriti. But when you are released, and this is what the Bhikshu has succeeded, Bhikshu has managed to come out of that. He is not particular about anything in this world anymore. No matter what happens in this world, it's of no significance to him. That state of mind, he has come to that. And he says, let the prakriti do whatever it does, let it give me happiness or distress. Let the planets do whatever it wants, let them do happiness or distress. I have no quarrel with anybody, no fight with anybody, no particular about anything, because only when we have desires inside, we become the slave of all these things, isn't it? We become the slave of others. And when we have desires, we have the slave of everybody. Even about the planets, we are expectations from the planets. And then we are asking, will the planets will give us some good results? So, and then we are saying, when the next planet takes over, everything will be fantastic. That's how the astrologers write that. Shani Dasha is gone, the Shukra is coming, and everything will be finer. But that is where we have to think about that. But to know that, that those things will not happen. So, I think it's half past 11, we'll stop it. Another half an hour we may need to conclude this. Tomorrow we'll finish Bhikshu Gita. And then by now, if you have thought about all these things, what I have spoken in so many passes, you will practically realize it. That Hastamalaka's realizations and Bhikshu's realizations are one and the same. They are not different. Both of them have come out of the mind and they have spoken to the world. That is their success. Freeing oneself from the mind and freedom from the body, that's what has happened to them. and they have spoken, and the truth is one what they have spoken. Which again, we will come see that what Krishna is going to say to Uddhava is not different. It's exactly the same. He's going to speak in the 28th chapter. We shall continue tomorrow. All glory to Srila Prabhupada. Yeah.